Good morning. As I said, also morning, as I greet fellow South Africans who may be following this roundtable discussion that we're going to have today from different platforms. I'm only doing the welcome on behalf of the portfolio committee, as the facilitation will be done more by Ms. Gadi from the side of ICASA. In welcoming everyone, it is important to just remind members as well as our guests that as we'll be receiving presentations and facilitation done by ICASA, the committee in June already received a presentation from ICASA. Same matter. And for that reason, ICASA would not necessarily present, but will have also an opportunity to respond where there would be clarity issues from the side of ICASA, where if that arises from the discussions. Indeed, the committee would have started from a point that we needed academic grounding, and in that case, we would have had a similar discussion with the VETS Link Centre, where we had presentations, and I think members would have also got quite good insight as it relates to spectrum licensing and so on. As part of empowering the committee, would have agreed as the committee that we'll also want to get the industry or sector players, including those that do research as part of supporting either the department or other players in the sector, like CSIR, that we bring all those around the table as part of empowering the committee. And you would see that the approach we would have taken is that we have these discussions not because there's a decision to make in a portfolio committee in the next few hours or so, but it helps us that as we get confronted by these discussions going forward, the committee has a fair understanding of what this entails, but also what is the thinking in the sector, and will be able to take those into account as we play our role as the committee. We are also going to be taking a back seat in terms of facilitation, also because we would want members to come in more as participants, as part of this empowerment that one has referred to of the committee. As you'll be aware, most of the committee members, probably with the exception of Honorable McKenzie and Honorable Van Damme, who served in the different committees. So that we are well informed about the sector, and that our decisions will therefore be well informed where we need to make decisions as the committee. That will be really my word of welcome. I have noted in the apologies that Ms. Pillay, who has joined the meeting, I saw it earlier, from SACF, may also leave the meeting earlier, but there will be representation. This is due to be remained the family, the loss of the father, and our condolences once again, which I've related to her this morning. But formally, let me do that, and we appreciate the commitment that even under difficult circumstances, she would have thought of prioritizing the program and living thereafter. With that, thanks. I hope Ms. Gadi would be ready to take the facilitation after this, and in that score, proceed with the roundtable discussion. Maybe the just one point with regard to time is that would really want to work in the allocated time, given that there is a house sitting most of the day. But it should allow us a dating period. Thanks, Ms. Gadi. You are ready. All right. Thanks, honorable members. You feel welcome. This is a program for us to participate. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you and the honorable members of the committee, to also our critical stakeholders on board and presenters. My name is Balisa Gadi, currently the acting chairperson of ICASA. Am I audible?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, I think this is a second round of engagement, which we have had, as Chairperson alludes to, with the VetLink Center, an academic, a very factual engagement we've had in the past month or so, engaging with all the factors, global trends, and all other initiatives that one could think of in relation to spectrum management and allocation. And really, worldly views were explored. Today's session is also a focus and putting emphasis on sector-based experiences and how best we can find a proper alignment in spectrum management, in also the impact of the 4IR, which we are in the middle of, also how these can assist South Africa to be globally competitive, how these can assist South Africa to be inclusive in a shared economy, also how then technology can take the country forward. I'm going to hand over to CSIR, which is really the heart of the research base for many aspects that relate to the spectrum, to Dr. Ntsibane Ntlatlapa to present and share the screen. But also my plea to members and participants is that we open up and engage. I think Chairperson gave me an assurance that this is an open discussion. It is not, does not necessarily hold the decorum of Parliament. So we are all required to make the input as much as we can so that we capacitate the committee in terms of the intellectual knowledge we have, but also the experiences we have. Thank you. Over to you, Dr. Ntsibane.
All right. Can you hear me better now? I think it was my other machine that was struggling to switch off. I've asked my colleague, Dr. Madikane, to share the slide, but I don't have sharing on my side. Can you, Elia, are you able to do that? Okay, thanks. It looks like the slides are on. Good morning, members. And good morning to you, Chair, and thanks for giving us this opportunity. We are honored to start this. I think before I start, I have a few of my colleagues that have joined this session. Can I ask if they can maybe introduce themselves, starting with Dr. Madikane?
Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. This is Elia Madikane, Manager for the Parliamentary, for the CSIR Liaison, Parliamentary Liaison Office.
Can you hear me, Elia?
Yes, we can hear both of you.
We can hear you.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is Moshe Masonta. I'm the research group leader within the CSIR, responsible for a research group that is named Spectrum Access and Management Innovation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair and parliamentary members, including esteemed guests. My name is Lucas Gumbi. I am a Business Development Manager and Technology Commercialization Manager at CSIR. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members from CSIR? Dr. Nkatapa, is there an issue there? Dr. Nkatapa, can you hear us? Over to you, Dr. Nkatapa. Over to you, Dr. Nkatapa. Over to you, Dr. Nkatapa.
I seem to not hear anyone. I'm not sure if anyone can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. We can hear you and see you, and you're looking very handsome.
Can I just get an indication whether you can still hear me, because my system here can't hear anybody.
Hear
yes,
you
we can hear you. Sharp, sharp.
Okay. Good, thanks. So the section, the presentation that we'll be doing this morning will have the four sections. The very first section, it will just be to just run through the overview of our organization, and we'll get onto the heart of the matter. Can we go to the first slide on the overview, Dr. Madikane? This is basically just a reminder. I will assume that the members of the committee will be familiar with that, but the CSIR is one of the science councils, and it was established quite a long time back. It's about 75 years now. The act that you see there of 1988 is the revision of the establishment of CSIR, but in effect, it was established 75 years back. But I think what is very important in terms of what we do is that we basically do particularly the multidisciplinary research and technological innovation. So what we will be discussing here is about the know-how that we have got whilst we have been doing our research and technological innovations. And in our work, we do cooperate with everyone from the private sector to the public sector. But most importantly, we choose the areas that would enable us to contribute to the improvement of the quality of life of the people of the Republic. So can we go to the next one? If we were to take that mandate and unpack it, it's basically we will talk about the better utilization of the resources of the Republic. And again, I think it's the correct time to talk about that part of the mandate today, because we're going to talk about one of the resources being spectrum, and we'll talk about how it can be better utilized for this, you know, for the betterment of the country. The other ones, it includes that we do manpower training, and I think just to confirm that we are not necessarily a university, so we don't give degrees, but we do provide some training. We also do the improvement of technical processes and methods. Whilst today we'll not talk about some of those, we have worked with the regulator a lot in terms of the improvement of their processes and methods. So the final thing is the promotion and expansion of existing as well as establishment of new industries. In a different setting, we could actually talk about that in the working with the authority in terms of establishing other new industries. We go to the next one. I'll go quicker on this one, but these are the 9 sectors in the revised CSIR strategy that we are looking at. And these are organized in 3 divisions. The top 3 sectors that you see there from left to right will be in our first division. They are more on the health, agriculture and foods, as well as the chemicals there. The next line, the next row there would be the 3 that will be in our second division. And this is where we will look through the value chain of the mining through to manufacturing. So this is the area where you would have heard recently about the ventilators that have come through from the CSIR or come from the manufacturing sector there in terms of the clusters. The final cluster here talks specifically about the resources and the better utilization of resources. How we will be able to manage the infrastructure smarter, as well as to enable newer services that are coming in. And in this particular case, this is at the heart of where we are driving the 4th Industrial Revolution services. And that cluster that deals with that is the one that is called Next Generation Enterprises and Institutions, which really deals with the digitization, both the government and the public sector. And this is where the team that deals with the spectrum research is housed. Can you go to the next one? So when we get to the heart of the discussion today, I thought we should start with what we understand by the 4th Industrial Revolution, and perhaps maybe just to talk a little bit more about the impact that we want. So there's a definition that came from the Presidential Commission for the fourth industrial revolution. And I must qualify that this is the definition that I got from the first draft. As most of us, we haven't received the final draft that has gone to the president. So I think the highlight there, and the first part of the definition, it talks about an era. If you talk about a fourth industrial revolution, we talk about an era. And that commission decided to say it's where people are using smart, connected, and converged, and they use the term cyber, physical, and biological systems. Now, and it goes further to say, and smart business models to define and reshape the social, economic, and political spheres. So I think it should be an understanding that the people are at the center of this era, and the people are the ones that are using this smart and connected technologies. The next part is just to indicate that it's not only the cyber technologies, and the cyber technologies are the digital technologies, but it also the physical technologies. The physical technologies such as the doing the manufacturing and the way of doing the manufacturing and the robotics that will be physical objects, as well as the biological systems that enable us to be able to develop new types of medications and so on. But finally, it's about the business models that enables us to make these changes. Right. So that's all of that is being incorporated into there. In terms of the technologies, the mega trends that are driving the fourth industrial revolution, and most of these mega trends will be coming from the literature from the World Economic Forum, will be both in the physical. I've talked about the physical around the 3D printing autonomous devices, things like renewable energy and so on. These are the physical trends that are coming through that are driving us towards the era of the fourth industrial revolution. From the digital side, it's mostly from the software side and the new software. AI is not as new. However, there has been recently that there have been breakthroughs in the AI field that enable it to be massively rolled out throughout the society. And other digital technologies such as the blockchain, and blockchain is perhaps most people know it more from the Bitcoin and the other currencies side, but it can also be used for other societal use. Internet of Things, and as well as a few new digital platforms. These are the ones that are driving the digital revolutions. And we do have the biological ones that will allow us to improve the life expectancy. So all of these trends are the ones that are pushing us towards this era. And when we combine them together, that's where we will get into the what is known as the fourth industrial revolution. You go to the next slide. I want to just highlight the impact of COVID-19 and the impact, both good and bad. What I would like to just highlight is the fact that the pandemic has propelled us into this world. We had been talking about this world that we live in, and we don't really know exactly how it will be going through. But we have seen since the advent of the pandemic that we have actually moved faster towards the fourth industrial revolution. And this is basically, we are seeing the explosion of this technology that we are using. Before, we would be sitting in Cape Town, and today we are having this discussion from different areas of the country. Can you go to the next slide? My apologies, it looks like there's a construction next to me here.
Sorry, if I come back and just...
The discussion today is going to be focused a lot more on the spectrum as a fuel for digital services. So just in preparation for getting into that discussion, it's very important that we understand that this is the digital services aspect of the fourth industrial revolution. But those digital services require extensive digital infrastructure to be able to do that. So they rely a lot, and many stakeholders have a key role to play in this. And we know that with our digital infrastructure in the country is mostly built by the private sector. So the private sector are the key players in terms of the development of the infrastructure. We do have the policymakers and the regulators who play a key role in enablement of that. Of course, we also have the manufacturers of the equipment that we use. And I believe maybe some of them maybe in this, in this forum. Can we go to the next? So in this slide, I think this is where now we want to put in spectrum in the place of us getting the impact. We have talked, when I started talking about the fourth industrial revolution, I talked about the impact that it would have. As you see in the ecosystem cycle that we have there, the impact comes there at the last. It comes as a result of having several services, the digital services that we talk about. But those services, you get them from using specific devices. So devices like the ones that I'm using today to be able to talk to you, or the devices that we use every day to talk to each other, like our mobile phones. Those are our devices, but of course, those devices cannot give us that if we don't have the infrastructure. So the infrastructure is the major part of the play. Now, when you talk about the mobile, today I think we'll be talking to the mobile industry and the broadcasting industry. Both of those industries, they cannot develop the infrastructure. Their infrastructure will be completely useless if they don't have the spectrum. So the spectrum is what actually unlocks that. That's why we would hear some saying that is the oil of the industry, or it is the oxygen of the industry. So without that spectrum, that infrastructure will not be developed, and in turn, we will not get to the point where we have the impact that we want. But at the center of this, we have to be really cognizant of the fact that as you get the networks expand and we get more and more people playing, everybody else play in that space, and the security of both the infrastructure and the data that flows in there is really key. Otherwise, the trust in the whole system will not be there, and we'll have criminals running amok on that. So this is the security is at the center of all of this. So this is in a sense a cycle. Once we have the impact, you will start to request more from the infrastructure, and I'm sure the operators would attest to the fact that at the onset of the pandemic, when people started to stay at home and work remotely, they started to now see more impact on their infrastructure. They had to extend the infrastructure very quickly, and the regulator had to respond quickly by releasing the spectrum for them to increase the services there. So this is a cycle that you'll get with that. But spectrum is the key in that. So let's go to the next slide. And the next slide now focuses a little bit more on the spectrum issues. And I think the The key here is that the conversation of today will not end when you are talking about the mobile communication without talking about the 5G. And this has really emerged as a lead standard for most for IR use cases. What you then have is the fact that 5G enhances the experience that you are having on the connectivity. So we are already having connectivity with 4G and others, but 5G increases that by making available more bandwidth. You have now newer technologies that can give you more bandwidth on the 5G. And it also enhances the number of connected devices. So in terms of the Internet of Things, it enables more devices to be on the network than you can do with your 4G. But what is new with 5G, which is not necessarily supported well with 4G, it's those uses which requires the low latency. And the latency here, just to complete things, would mean the time it takes for you to get the response when you require the service. So when you send in the request to the service provider, the time it takes to get you there. Now, 5G is enhancing that, and by doing that, it's enabling some mission critical services. Services like where you do more automation, and if you are doing more automation and you are relying on 5G, you would want the response to be quicker, whether it's in a factory or it's in where you are having the vehicles moving and so on. For us to get that, those services are defined in the standard. And they define from the ITU, and then you have the standards by the standard development bodies like 3GPP. Those require additional spectrum. So you can get those basic, those additional services that are good on 5G if you get additional spectrum. And then 5G will utilize two parts of the spectrum. They will use the existing spectrum that has already been used by the other technologies. And this is usually that referred to as the coverage spectrum, basically. A little bit more of the capacity, but also the spectrum that is below the 6 gigahertz. And this is what is already used now for the mobile services. But it also requires new bands, which are in the much higher bands. While there's a lot of spectrum in those bands, the issue there is that they cannot cover a long distance, and hence it will require a lot of small cells to be developed to be able to provide that particular capacity. So it is clear that we can get the benefit from 5G and go to get the 4IR impact. But for us to do that, we need additional spectrum. So the infrastructure developers will require more spectrum to be able to support the 5G services. We can go to the next one. What I also want to highlight is that whilst 5G is a leading standard, Wi-Fi has been used a lot as a complementary technology to all the other systems. In my office today, I've connected my laptop to the Wi-Fi in the corporate system here. If I was doing this presentation from my home, I also would have connected my laptop to the Wi-Fi. So we do have Wi-Fi as a key and complement to the 5G and other technologies. What is happening now as a trend across the world is the fact that Wi-Fi hasn't received new spectrum for a very long time. up until now. And I think there's movements across the world to look at adding more spectrum to the Wi-Fi ecosystem to be able to get the similar benefits to the ones that we can get with 5G. As an example, the USA has released quite a lot of spectrum. I think this is the biggest chunk of spectrum that has been released for the use of by Wi-Fi and other technologies like those, which is a big chunk, is 120 megahertz of that spectrum. It was released this year. UK released a smaller version of that, which is the lower part of the 6 gigahertz. And other markets are looking at this. Now, there's always a contention as to whether that spectrum would be allocated to 5G or to Wi-Fi. And I think it's about time that we also take it a position and look to increasing the value that we already have with Wi-Fi by allocating additional spectrum to Wi-Fi. Next. So the next section, we just to wrap up what we have said. So I've introduced two technological standards, but I think sometimes it's a misnomer that those are the only users of spectrum, but there are many other users of spectrum. So those users are what are called direct users of spectrum and who then generate the commercial communication services. So they generate value, economic value in that way. But we also have indirect users of spectrum who then generate value in part through other services and not necessarily through direct communication services. For instance, when you have the businesses which use Wi-Fi or use other types of connectivity to deliver their business services better than they would have. You have in the logistics sector, you could actually be able to track your goods better. You are using spectrum to do that, but you are not delivering the communication services. So this is an indirect user of spectrum that still generates economic value by relying on those. There are also users that should also not be left outside. And these users are those who deliver social value. The emergency services are those. You have the health services and education. They don't deliver economic value, but they actually rely on spectrum to be able to deliver the services that we all require. And usually quantifying the value of this use, the social use of spectrum, it's very difficult to do because for the direct users and also the indirect users, you can actually just look at the GDP contribution of that and so on. But for the social value, it's very difficult to quantify that. However, it is necessary to also take that into consideration whenever there's any discussion about the spectrum allocations. Next slide. So these measures would be the ones that there are several measures that are used to assess the value. I think we will look at in the next slide some examples of how these are used. But I think I would want to really re-highlight the fact that there are other uses that are very difficult for us to quantify, such as the social values. The final thing that is in this slide, just before we go to the next slide, is that there are additional ways in which you can require, you can potentially add values. And I think the one of them is the promotion of active secondary marketing spectrum, right? So that basically, if you go to the next slide, we will deal a little bit more about the secondary market of spectrum. So there's a Generally, go to the slide 18. So on slide 18 there, it talks about the authorization options that usually are used by the operators to the regulators to be able to allow spectrum. And at the top we have what are called the license, which are the individual authorizations. At the bottom we have general authorizations. Now today, when I look at the program, the two industry associations are generally having more people coming from where you are authorized as a primary use and you have exclusive access to spectrum, the cellular networks as well as the broadcasting networks. At the other extreme, you have what are called the shared spectrum commons, where the spectrum is, you don't have to have a license, you share it with everyone. You just have to observe certain rules, certain etiquette rules. What is emerging is the one in between. In between those, taking advantages of both the top and the bottom, there's a, what is emerging as a secondary market where it's shared spectrum access. You can have something like you know, authorized shared access, or you can have others that are unlicensed, like the TV USB, is the way that we are using in South Africa. So those are the newer models that should always be looked into and incorporated into the modes of enabling the next spectrum. There's two, there's the shared ones are enabling the secondary access to spectrum, and they typically rely on newer technologies to be able to do that. Can you go to the next one? So the benefits really, we have benefits to all of this. The exclusive spectrum is still, is highly beneficial because once you give exclusive access to the access to spectrum, it provides the best possible safeguard against the interference. And in the mobile side or in the wireless, once you reduce the interference, you are able to deliver better quality. So the broadcasters and the mobile operators fall into that category. What you do find is that at times it will lead to underutilization. So you find that the models that are used, an operator will get exclusive access to spectrum to cover the entire country, but they may not be able to cover that country either because they don't have access to enough investment to build the infrastructure, or it is their business model, it is their choice and their business model to say, we will cover only these areas, all these other areas we will not go to. And that would lead to that particular spectrum not being used as efficiently as possible. And you go to the next one. And the benefit here is on the shared spectrum commons, and Wi-Fi is the biggest user of that spectrum, is that it enables different uses in terms of, you know, it enables more innovation in terms of how this is used. And this is what has propelled uses like such as mesh networking has been propelled a lot more through the Wi-Fi. You have smart speakers, you have all of these things that are basically leveraging on Wi-Fi to build that. So it does support a lot of innovative business models. And it can actually expand access to the communication services, such as when the, you know, the operators offload the capacity from their mobile networks, whether it's mobile networks or fixed networks to Wi-Fi, and so on. So it does enable also a free access to certain services, like in public areas. In public areas, you have a lot of free access to services through Wi-Fi. So that is very quite beneficial to always consider. You go to the next slide. So these are, in a sense, the examples of what you can get from that. There's a study that I looked at from UK, and these are the numbers coming from there. So the Ofcom is the regulator in the UK, which had set the operator revenue. This way it was delivering the value of spectrum use from the operator revenue, which is in dollars, is $52 billion. And 60% of that is mobile services, and 20% is broadcasting. And other sectors appear there. So you can see that the mobile services are the ones that are doing the biggest chunk. And the numbers are similar if you look at our local area here. So ICASA does print annual state of the ICT report. And when you look at the mobile services, the value from there, this is the also the revenue side is about $98 billion. So that's a big chunk into the economy, and 41% of that is mobile data services. So whilst we do have the broadcasting with $38 billion, there's a clear understanding that the mobile services, and this is all over the world, that they are squeezing a lot more value from the spectrum than most other services. When you look at the Wi-Fi, there's a different study that was completed recently that looked at the operator, that looks at the value of the Wi-Fi services. Now, the way that they have this was treated is not purely a basis on the operator revenue, but it also looks at what is the offset of using this particular services. What is the value of those free services, public services, home use, enterprise use, and so on. And when you take all of that, the value here, this is the values for the UK. The study was covering the UK, US, South Korea, and a few other countries. But there was no part of the South Africa, so we haven't actually had a study that talks about the value of Wi-Fi in the country. But the total value there is taken to be about $43 billion. Now, this is coming close to what you will get in the UK as the revenue part from the from the mobile operators. So you can actually see that whilst Wi-Fi may be said to be an unlicensed technology, it does generate a lot of value, and if we add additional spectrum to that, we'll increase that value that we can get. Next slide. So in wrapping up this part, I think we want to underscore that creating secondary markets through spectrum sharing framework is a third way between the exclusive and the shared spectrum commons. Which will enable additional users to come on board and provide the services. And again, as I said, sometimes it relies a lot on the technologies, such as what we call, in generic terms, shared spectrum shared sharing system. And this could bring in a large number of small tier two operators that will access spectrum on a secondary basis. So for the mobile spectrum, currently we have six operators that have access to spectrum for the mobile services. And not all of them are using the spectrum across the, their full spectrum usage across the country. If part of that spectrum could be enabled to be accessed by the secondary operators, it could actually bring a large number. I was looking at the study from the UK. UK has enabled the use of spectrum on a secondary basis. You actually have brought in 17 new licenses that has come on board to use the same spectrum on a secondary basis. They don't cover the whole country, but they are now beginning to use that spectrum to offer the the secondary services there. Okay, so let's go towards the recommendations that we'd like to have. I think we will, can I just stop on this? Yes. Okay, so the I've talked about the benefits here of that, and I think what I would like to draw the attention of everybody is that there's a study that was published recently, which was done by Deloitte on behalf of the GSMA, which you know, looked at the benefits that you can get on the shared spectrum side. You can go to the next slide, and it talks a little bit about that. I won't necessarily spend enough time on this, but that study is called the Impact of Licensed Shared Use Access. So that's highlighted the fact that you can get up to 260 billion. This was this US study. But just unlocking that, if you allow sharing, you can unlock that additional value, which you will not get any of that. And it says in the UK, that value has gone up to about 86 billion. We will do that for our, we can do that for our country, but the issue is unlocking shared secondary spectrum access unlocks additional value. So we can now maybe skip this part and then go to the recommendations. And there are two slides that are talking about recommendations here. The first one talks about the development of a new spectrum roadmap. I think we have an IMT roadmap, and it considered the requirements for 4G and 5G in terms of that. But that roadmap is not dealing with additional spectrum that should be made for available for spectrum commons. And perhaps we need to have that as an additional issue. And then the third one would be to say, how do we consider the additional secondary spectrum markets for spectrum to be open? Now, we already have TV white spaces regulations in the country, which has the, which is the first type of regulation that really has opened the shared spectrum secondary one using the automated frequency assignments. But that can be extended to other bands as well. There was always an intention to expand beyond the TV white spaces when those regulations were developed. The last slide, which is the second set of the recommendations, I think the second set of the recommendations is a little bit broader. We are talking about spectrum sharing here, but this is a little bit broader than that. And it talks about being able to know what you have. What is it that you have and what is where? So if we have a publicly accessible database where you can understand which spectrum band is used where and which one is available that they can be able to access, then someone who wants to come in on a secondary basis could always say, in my area, I'm aware that there's this particular spectrum band that is not available. Can I have access to that spectrum on a secondary basis to be able to offer that? And this whole thing can also be extended to the to understanding where infrastructure that is on the ground is. And I'm sure most of you would not like that, as much as I don't like that in my neighborhood, every other day you have someone ditching up the street and laying fiber. You end up having 3-4 different fiber ducts along the streets when in fact that can be shared. So you can have one or two, and then that can be shared by others. But if we don't know where they are, we will not be able to know the opportunities for sharing. So this database could also be leveraged for planning purposes, both by the state and both by the industry. We have seen this as a problem now at the onset of the pandemic, that if you don't know exactly the extent of the coverage, then you won't be able to make the proper interventions that you need to make. So this is the last slide in my slide deck here. And thank you, Chair, for allowing me to do that. I think you have the slides. You can see the extra slide there that shows what you can do if you have this kind of data. This is the kind of study that we did and that can be helpful if you have access to the data. Thank you, Chair. I'm struggling a little bit with my sound system here. I'll try to see if I can sort it out so that I can hear the question.
I think I'm using the sharp emoji now, which is, we are fine. Thank you very much, Dr. Ntlatlapa. We have received your comprehensive submission, and it's also been very deliberate on the research side. I'm not going to touch on any pointers at this moment, but we'll request the director of NAB, Nadia, to come on board and present so that we are able to manage the limited time we have. Over to you, Nadia.
Morning, Madam Chair, and morning, Honourable Members of Parliament. It's really wonderful to be here with you on this online engagement. I'm not by myself today. I'm being joined, thankfully, by colleagues of NAB. Tawana and Chair, I think there's some feedback. Thank you. Joined by Tawana and Cheke, good morning, as well as I hope on the call is our Deputy Chair of the NAB, Mr. Kwezi Ntungwana. I'm not too sure if he's on the line. We also have the Chairman of our NAB Technical Committee, Andy Lewis, as well as the Deputy Chair of the Technical Committee, I hope he's also on the line, Mr. Thabo Makanete. So we're going to be very succinct this morning, Madam Chair, and we really are very thankful for the opportunity. Tawana, you can skip on to the next slide. Thank you. So just the context again, we are really delighted to be engaging with yourself, and we understand that you have been through the Link Center training. You may be aware, Madam Chair, that quite a number of our colleagues on this call have been practitioners in both policy and regulation and are also license holders, and from time to time have also lectured at the Link Center. So I'm sure that we've managed to meet with some colleagues along the way. We really wanted to, just as we start, give you a quick high-level overview of who the NAB is, given that this is our first engagement with yourselves. And then we'll look at a few of the key spectrum management issues, and then also looking at the fourth industrial revolution and its impact on broadcasting. So I'm pleased that we have our technical experts with us on this call, and they will also lead the latter part of this presentation. So the NAB is a voluntary association that was formed way back in 1993. We do represent all three tiers of broadcasters, which include the public, commercial, and community, as well as signal providers and industry associates. Madam Chair, we're fully funded by our members, and we're a consensus-driven organization. So we deal with the high policy, regulatory, principal issues, and we never ever deal with competitive issues. We also established the BCCSA. You might be familiar that they administer the Code of Conduct for Broadcasters as provided in Section 54 of the ECA, and obviously they're recognized by the regulator. The NAB has really been at the forefront of representing the broadcasting industry in policy and regulatory matters right at the onset and the creation of the former IBA, which is the successor, of course, to the merged regulator, ICASA. Our members include the SABC, the key commercial and private radio stations, as well as a number of community stations, all the television broadcasters. We also include in our membership Centec, Orbicom, Globecast, Telemedia, Namisa Arena, MDDA, and others. Just a quick snapshot of the member logos, and you can click through to the next one, thanks Tawana, and the next one. And this just gives you a sense of who we are. And our mission is really to advance the interests of the entire broadcasting industry through these kinds of representations and engagements on policy and regulatory issues. We also take, as I said, you know, high-level key principle industry positions to ensure that we continue to build a sustainable and robust broadcasting system in South Africa. We've done hundreds, if not thousands, of submissions over the years, Madam Chair, as I said, at the emergence of independent broadcasting regulation. We've also participated in putting forward nominations when they do arise for institutions like ICASA, the MDDA, the BBBE, ICT Sector Council, Mixed Seater Board, etc. And our members are kept, you know, totally updated on all sector-related developments that affect them. We really are most critically concerned with fostering an effective stakeholder engagement and to also provide advisory support where we can. We do conduct research, and we did submit to Honourable Members of Parliament our State of the Broadcasting Industry Report, which we compiled, which covered the period 2015 to 2018, which was our second edition when we were celebrating 25 years of freedom in broadcasting. So that report is available as well on our website. A few activities of the NAB, we've been trialing digital audio broadcasting for some time with Sadiba, and we also have been working in the area of skills development. More than a decade ago, we'd initiated an engineering learnership, particularly to look at the skills gap in this area, and I think we've also noticed that this is Women's Month, and regrettably, there's still a huge gap in terms of the engineering and technical capacity in our industry across the board. It's something we still have to work on. Much more meaningfully. We conduct regular seminars and roundtables, and we really look at, you know, how issues are impacting and affecting the continued growth of the industry. Next slide. Thanks, Tawana. And just a reminder, and it was so wonderful listening to the doctor from CSIR talking about the value of spectrum, and I think I want to just remind all of us that when we talk about the value of spectrum in the broadcasting industry, we just have to look at what's happened in light of the impact of COVID-19, that every single one of us are turning to our radio, to our television sets for information, education, entertainment. We are also reminded that we are, you know, fully supported by the backbone infrastructure in this country, and that we work and live in an incredible, robust democracy where we need to find ways of strengthening and improving the capacity for all our citizens to access information, the technologies and the devices. So just looking at audience growth, and this came out of our industry report, it's just a reminder, you know, from 2014 to towards the end of 2018, the dramatic shifts we saw in terms of TV audiences and radio audiences, and right now we're talking in excess of 35.8 million radio audiences and in excess of 38.2 on the television side. You can go to the next slide, Tawana. And the services, just again, just a reminder, you know, way back in 1994 when the first licensing happened, that the numbers, it's hard to believe now that there were just between 5 to 10 services growing up, and because of subscription broadcasting as well as free-to-air, at any given time, we have more than 298 channels available on our television services, and that's a combination, of course, of free-to-air and as well as subscription. On the radio side as well, just think that, you know, 27 years ago, there were 32 stations at a given point. Today, there are more than 264 radio stations. Of course, the majority of the radio stations are in the community category, and that's really wonderful in terms of our three-tier system. And again, I just want to remind members, you may recall that in the early licensing of community radio broadcasting, the issue around spectrum sharing was very key. There were community radio broadcasters who were licensed to broadcast on the same frequency and to share the day parts. So you'd have a specific community broadcasting during perhaps the morning, another community broadcasting later in the afternoon. So this whole concept of sharing, of ensuring that we use the spectrum in an efficient way, has been on the agenda, certainly of the regulator, you know, from the emergence of broadcasting regulation. As a highly regulated industry, and you know, we do not provide these services without the reliance of infrastructure, and spectrum is a national resource. It's, we believe, still, of course, highly contested, and it still has limitations. And I'm going to hand over to Tawana, who will take us through some of the spectrum management issues, of course, that is within the framework and context of the ECA provisions. And I know that you've all been through the Link Center training, so you would have gone through this as well. But I think it's important for us to just look at that at a high level again. And Tawana will just go through these next few slides, focusing really on the provisions in the ECA. Tawana, over to you.
Thank you very much, Nadia. Greetings, Madam Chair, as well as the committee. Thank you very much for affording us this opportunity. The next slide will really highlight the legislative context within which this very important resource is managed and through which services are made available to the public. And the primary legislation is the Electronic Communications Act, which is administered by ICASA. And quite importantly, looking at the objects of the ECA is where it outlines in relation to spectrum what the objects of the ECA are and who then is given certain roles and responsibility in ensuring that there is indeed the efficient use of radio frequency spectrum. And that is set out in Section 2E of the ECA. Chapter 5 deals quite comprehensively with the control of the radio frequency spectrum between Sections 30 and 34, and this essentially provides that the authority is given the responsibility of controlling, planning, administering, as well as managing the use and licensing of radio frequency spectrum, except where it relates to the role of the minister as the representative of the Republic of South Africa at international fora. And so we've seen from time to time the authority would issue the radio frequency plan, and we are always grateful for the opportunity that we have as industry to make some submissions and input to ensure that whilst we increase services and make more services available to the public, that this does not then compromise some of the existing services. We often raise issues of possible interference, and we'll get into these implications later on. And quite importantly, and which we've always raised in our submissions, even when we were reviewing the Electronic Communications Act, Section 34.2 provides that the minister must approve the National Radio Frequency Plan as developed by the authority. Moving on, in terms of the radio frequency plan itself, which sets out which bands are assigned to which particular services, the plan has to then designate the radio frequency plan to be used in respect of the designated services. This is to ensure that the radio frequency spectrum is used and managed in an orderly, efficient, and effective manner to ensure that consumers are not compromised by poor quality services in the event that there is that cross frequency that sometimes happens where then unfortunately you'll have interference across different services. And in managing spectrum through the radio frequency plan, the authority ensures that it reduces congestion on the frequency plans and ensures that there is adequate protection for the licensees, as we've seen that there's a lot of investment, there's a lot of money that goes into making services available, into acquiring the infrastructure. And so the management of services takes this into consideration to ensure that indeed licensees are able to provide services to consumers, which is quite important, especially as we've seen now there's been that increased reliance on the services that are made available by the broadcasters to ensure that members of the general public are informed and they're kept abreast of all the developments and all the information that is made available to the public. Quite importantly, in managing spectrum, there has to be that flexibility to ensure the rapid and effective introduction of new technologies, and that is to ensure that we are able to collectively as an industry respond. As we've seen, it was quite it was great to see when the authority was able to make some spectrum bands available. And so this is provided for within the greater legislative context. In the next sections, where we'll then be looking at some of the challenges that are experienced and where we'll then also be discussing the implications of the fourth industrial revolution, I will be handing over now to Thabo, and thereafter he will then hand over to Andy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to members of the Portfolio Committee and other guests. Of course, in managing spectrum, there are always challenges, and these come from sharing and these and other issues. But if we look at the first challenge there, which is the future of broadcasting, the spectrum needs of broadcasters are projected by the policymaker and the regulator. And the unfortunate thing is that technology moves so quickly that you find policy and regulation lags a bit behind the movement of technology. And consultation and engagement also with the broadcasting sector in preparation for the WRC and other international forums. You will know that in the next WRC, there is going to be discussions around the current terrestrial broadcasting spectrum, wherein a number of countries actually looking at the third digital dividend, which is the 600 band to be used for IMT services. And this is the band that we are currently using as broadcasters for DTT in the country and throughout the continent as well. And I think also when you talk about migration, I mean, there's been a lot of delays in the project, which has actually delayed the issuing of that high demand spectrum in 700 and 800 bands. Also on the digital audio side, we have seen a bit of slow movement in terms of the policy and the regulatory framework around this, but we are glad to see that there is something that is happening in this space, and hopefully there will be some launches of digital audio services. I think on the joint spectrum advisory group processes as well, we don't move as quickly. We don't meet as often as we would like to make sure that what we are dealing with on the DTT space, we can move the project rapidly from the management of spectrum. And it should be noted that when we switch off the analog transmitters, it does not necessarily mean we are ready to use the 700 and 800 megahertz bands. We still have to do the digital to digital migration, and this may take quite some time to fulfill. So those are the processes that we are dealing with under JSEC. Spectrum sharing studies are also very key, specifically in the lead up to the WRC, because in a number of bands we share services between broadcasting, between telecoms and other services as well. We have seen quite a lack of monitoring of the efficient use of spectrum as well. The principle of use it or lose it. I think the CSIR presentation did discuss this a bit, that there are some areas where spectrum has been assigned but it's not been used. So we have not seen much of monitoring in this area. And I think the skills and capacity constraints as well, in terms of the management of frequency spectrum, I think this has also led to the delays that we have seen in the issuing of new spectrum as well, from the side of policy, from the side of regulatory as well. And there are a lot of concerns around the public interest objectives being balanced between broadcasting and telecoms. We know that in telecoms we are looking at 5G right now. There is a lot that is happening in that space, but in the broadcasting side as well, there is a lot of movement towards new technologies there. For instance, we have been broadcasting in HD for quite a number of years, but broadcasters are now moving towards 4K and 8K, and that is quite spectrum hungry when it comes to making sure that those services are available to the public. And also of late, we have been seeing increasing interference that has been experienced by broadcasters, specifically the satellite operators, because in a lot of the bands that we operate in as satellite operators, we are sharing those bands with fixed services. We are sharing them with some mobile services as well. So there is a requirement from ICASA, I think, to make sure that when it comes to sharing, there is a lot of work that is done around consultation with all the users that are sharing a particular band. I will then hand over, Chair, to to the chair of our technical committee from the NAB, Mr. Andy Lewis. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Thabo. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Madam Chair and the Portfolio Committee. Right, so into television, OTT, the new buzzword, over-the-top television, is people watching TV on their cell phones through streaming services. Packaging of those services and how people have the ability to watch things on demand. So now there's a shift away from the 8 o'clock news is at 8 o'clock. You can now go and watch the news at any time at a later stage. The digital migration that Thabo talked about, making the DTT spectrum available for a purely broadcast delivery over the airwaves, okay, and then TV advertising there is how to turn it into monetizing. Then let's not forget about radio. Radio still has a huge impact in the broadcasting environment. There's still more people that listen to the radio than watch TV, and the on-demand aspect of that where people can listen to specific shows packaged, not necessarily live. On to the next slide then. Right, so the fourth industrial revolution and what that really means. It's an evolution in how things can change due to bigger pipes, basically giving us more bandwidth available, allowing us to do things much faster, much more volume. Thabo spoke about going into 4K ultra high definition. Much better quality that requires much more content. And in the chain, we've got both in the contribution side of where signals are coming in and in the distribution, how the man in the street is going to watch the TV programs and listen to the radio shows. So there's quite a lot of information there. Next one, yes. So how the challenges are going to come through. Lots of opportunities there as well in people's skills changing. I think the key thing there is how the technology is going to change how we interact, and we've seen that now with the lockdown of how people are interacting through a virtual platform. However, there isn't any sort of defined country strategy on how we're going to use the different technologies and the amount of radio frequency spectrum they're all going to occupy. Then opportunities, lots of opportunities. You know, when the creative people get together, they have wonderful ideas, and those ideas are normally quite bandwidth hungry and quite intense. We talk about rich data as in high quality information and better value for the customer, the person watching. There are opportunities there for different industries to start up. AI, artificial intelligence, is there. That involves connectivity. So anything that we want to talk to machines with is going to need some kind of wired connection and more likely a wireless connection through radio frequency spectrum. On to the next one then. Right, so 5G plays a key role in that because that is the radio frequency spectrum that is going to allow the mobile operators to deliver content to and from mobile devices through the GSM standard. We've seen a number of studies internationally coming through and how there's lots of potential. So it's going to be a case of demand matching supply and what the mobile operators can currently provide and what they want to provide in future. And the key thing there is wireless communication. All right, so inside the broadcast industry, concerns and things to consider is balancing it out. Keeping all parties, all the stakeholders satisfied all of the time is probably not going to ever work. So it's finding a middle ground with sustainable communications there. I think that's the key issue. Audio and visual policy will then need to be decided upon to give the industry a clear idea of where to go forwards. All right, that's everything from us. Shall we take any questions?
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay, thanks, Andy.
Our slide deck obviously is available to colleagues, and there's a lot more detail in that. I think the key concerns, and as raised by Thabo, is the realities of actual license holders right now, and the implications around not only interference, but also the clear and efficient management of spectrum. I think that certainly on the broadcasting side, Madam Chair and colleagues, you are aware that we have been waiting for the publication of the audiovisual white paper or discussion document. When the national integrated ICT review process commenced early in 2013-2014, when the two departments were split, the broadcasting issues were then carved out to be dealt with more holistically and separately. We have been waiting for a while as an industry then, Madam Chair, to see what that audiovisual paper contains and hopefully to begin to develop a new way forward in terms of where broadcasting goes into the future. Just a reminder again, when we talk about, the impact certainly of broadcasting, I want to underscore again, all we have to do is reflect very, very honestly on what the coronavirus pandemic has done in, amplifying and casting a really bright light on the huge levels of inequality, of the concerns around affordability, broadband deployment, the concerns around basic access for all our children, the issues around access to devices. And I think the critical issue that the CSIR colleague raised around Wi-Fi and around access and around releasing further spectrum, these are core and critical issues that have to be taken forward. We will not go into the unfortunate, very long delays around digital terrestrial television and migration issues. What we want to do, Madam Chair, is look at how we chart a way forward and take the industry and, of course, the country forward in terms of inclusive economic development and growth. We're happy to take any questions, and we do hope this is an opportunity for future engagements, and engaging at such a short roundtable certainly is not optimal. As I said to colleagues and to honourable members of Parliament, members of the NAB have worked in this space for more than 27 years. We've got deep skills, and we're very happy to assist and to support wherever necessary. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nadia. Thank you to NAB, and also for keeping us in the loop and also holding up and elevating many of the challenges as we craft a new broadcasting future for all in South Africa. I think just to recap on the report recently presented by NAB previously, in fact, on the impact of COVID and how you have impacted as members to see to it that gender-based violence is also taken care of within your industry. I think it was with much appreciation to learn and to see the deliberate efforts that were put in there. Without any engagement for now, I'm going to request Katharina Pillay to present. Are you on board, Katharina? Katharina?
Chairperson.
Yes. Ms. Baki?
I do not know through you. Yes, through you. I do not know whether you've heard that Katharina has lost her father day before yesterday. So I'm not sure whether she did. Maybe somebody else is going to make the presentation, but it won't be her.
Yes, she informed the chairperson of portfolio committee and also ourselves in the forum. We are aware and promised to come on board just for this, but I think then I was communicating with her in between, and she said she also had load shedding challenges. If she's not on board, is there a delegated party to take over? Thank you, Acting DG.
Hello, Chairperson. Sheila Zimakofani here.
Thank you very much.
Quick, can I proceed to help
yes.
having my... Okay, good.
Yes, please
Thank
proceed.
You. Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson, distinguished guests, and also members of the Parliament. I think as you've heard, I'll try to help Katrina through this.
Okay.
And I think whenever she's able to come through, she'll be able to then pick up on that. And I think from the SACS side, we also have other colleagues on the line. I think I don't know, maybe Maxime and Andrew, you want to say something, introduce yourself quickly, and then we can be able to work through together on this presentation.
Please proceed. Thank you. You are welcome.
Thank you. Maxim, can we have the presentation on a presentation mode so that they can see the slide very well?
Let me introduce myself first, the chair and honorable members. My name is Maxim Naido. I'm from Vodacom. But in this particular engagement, we are joining as members of SACF. I will shortly start to... present the slides in the full screen mode. My colleague, Dr. Barenser, I think may also be on the call, and he can perhaps introduce himself as well. Thank you.
Andrew, are you on the line?
Andrew? Andrew, Dr. Barenser? Okay.
Okay, I think let me proceed with the presentation,
yes.
Madam Chair, so to save time. So I think our focus will be the heading implication of the spectrum licensing and the management on the sector. If we move to the next slide, please. See. Just to introduce SACF, this is an industry association with a primary focus on working on regulatory advocacy and also ensuring that we can be able to drive a sustainable investment climate in the industry. We consist of operators, vendors, and then also other service providers in the ICT sector. Okay, next slide. Can we move to the next slide? Maxim, can you move to the next slide?
Yeah, so I've updated the slides on my side. There may be a bit of a lag in terms of...
Okay, maybe it's a little bit slow. So, yeah, I think maybe if you go to the previous one, I think the slide was just mainly was to talk about the world as we know it, today is not the same world as we had it before COVID. I think the COVID, I think as it has been said by other speakers, the whole scenario with the COVID has kind of brought about the importance that ICT plays in the society. And then also, I think on top of that, we started to realize that ICT is really key in terms of making sure that the society remains connected. And then to be able to going forward, as the country enters into the era of the fourth industrial revolution, it's even going to be more important to make sure that we do not leave any members of the society outside. And I think the presentation, the main thing maybe to leave, to kind of raise the members it will touch on three main things that we want you to think through on the presentation. Is that we have seen, as we say here, that during the COVID, there's been a lot of increase in terms of people onto the digital platform. I think the big question is going to be, as we enter the era where now the temporary spectrum matters needs to be obviously closed, the question is going to be, what's going to happen to our society? Where will we be? What kind of temporary plans do we put in place? And I want us to think in terms of that, because of we have brought people into this platform, and then people are kind of making sure that they drive their life through the digital platform. The question is going to be, how do we then work as a society, as a country, to make sure that we can be able to ensure that we do not disrupt that particular cycle? We make sure that they even get into this platform more and more going forward. Okay. Next slide. I will touch a bit on some of the key issues around the issues of, it will come really more in flow from a technology neutrality perspective. Talk a bit about the spectrum, and I think a lot has been said before, but some of the points I may not repeat. The other issue as well that we need to also talk to is the whole issue of the requirements of the spectrum mix. I think one of the key issues we are realizing now is that as the networks grow, carry more traffic, it becomes important that as a country we start to think about how do you create a spectrum toolbox where the player can be able to have a mix of low-band spectrum, mid-band spectrum, and high-band spectrum. And just to give a bit of a perspective of why this differentiation is important is because of your lower-band spectrum has got a propagation that it helps you to be able to cover wide areas, so which is very important for your rural areas. And then whereas obviously your mid-band and your high-band spectrum is what you require in the cities where you need to be able to carry more traffic. So therefore, you do not need either or the other, but I think a mixture of the two makes you to be able to deliver a very good experience to the end users as well. And the major thing is that as well, on one of the key issues, that as we get out of this pandemic, the question becomes, what are some of the things that needs to be put in place, having seen the power of the industry to be able to can stimulate investment, to be able to can make sure that we can drive more people into this platform and really drive much more better life for all going forward. Okay, next slide. I think with this one, the slide really just mentioned a bit of an overview, and I'll not go through each and every bullet, but the main thing that is just indicating is that to operate in a with this spectrum, you need to consider a number of mixtures in terms of there is some licensed spectrum. There's also unlicensed spectrum, as I've talked also previously on the lower band, mid band, and high band spectrum. So we need to be able to can think in terms of how do we then create this toolbox to be able to make sure that the players in the market are able to have the right toolbox to be able to can generate. To be able to can have attractive business cases, to be able to can make sure that they can be able to deliver the good services as well. And as we go into the fourth industrial revolution as well, there's obviously a more need to be able to can embrace the new technologies that can be able to help the market and the industry to be able to deliver some of the services that will facilitate industry transformations. Okay, next one. This then obviously just provide the context in terms of the with the COVID-19 situation that it has really fundamentally we have seen and appreciate what the government has done in terms of making sure that they create available environment of the temporary spectrum. And I think that we have seen in terms of how it has spurred a lot of demand, which we have seen growth. And I think there's been a lot of publication around that. And it's not only South Africa, and I think around the world, we've seen a lot of growth because that now more and more people has to come into a digital platform, more digitized to be able to continue to create business continuity. And then it really emphasized the need that the ICT is very important and very critical. And then that has been allocated, we've been able to see the players being able to carry that traffic demand going forward. Okay, next one. Okay, I think this part as well is in terms of the extensions, extending access. Some of the key things I think going forward as well is going to be in terms of how do we then ensure that we extend the access, because I think we are moving into this phase where we are seeing the ICT importance, we are seeing the pandemic that is facing the world, which we don't know when it will end, but then we also need to bring more and more people into the digital platform, because we've seen now that through digital platform people can be able to transact from anywhere, transacting everywhere. So that becomes obviously an important thing to be able to say, how do we attract more investment, and then how do we also to drive the issues of taking some of the costs that might be limiting the people to be able to enter into the digital space. Because as we move into this fourth industrial revolution, we'll realize that some of the terminal requirements would be some of the things that people would not necessarily have access to today. And then that will require to be able to say, what can the players in the market do to be able to stimulate that and create access? And then also, what would be some of the things that we could be able to do in the policy space, for example, in terms of taxation or custom duties in terms of the equipment? Because we're starting to really see that this ICT infrastructure is very important for the society going forward. The other thing as well is about how do we then educate our people to be able to bring them more and more into the digital space, because some of them, it might be that they are still out there because of the challenge of not being able to utilize some of these devices. And I think how do we then create that collaboration as a society to make sure that we create the right skills, and then also there's the right content that is generated for that as well. Okay, next slide. I've touched a bit on this, but I think this just outlines the process that was followed. And I think the main message here is a message of appreciation to say, I think what the government has done and what the regulator has done in terms of acting speedily to be able to make sure that there is some spectrum availability to the market during this pandemic. We have seen a major difference that it has been able to bring to the industry to make a difference. Okay. Next one. I think if I may summarize, I think some of the positives we have seen as a result of this temporary spectrum is that I think we have seen the traffic growth that have shown the numbers. We've enabled people to be able to work from home and also learning to be able to take place from home. I think there's continued, obviously, economic activity in some of the sectors that we're able to digitize and be able to be remote. And then the other area as well is that we are seeing that there has been some of the transformation that has been happening in terms of some of the trials or new technologies that has been looking into. And I think to emphasize the point that it's always in this industry to be able to evolve with the new technologies, because it enables you to be able to do more with less. And then also, it's also enabling you to be able to make sure that as a global economy, you are able to keep your people relevant and connected to the rest of the world as well. And I think we've seen the industries looking into how to keep up with that. But that being said, I think the challenges remain in terms of what is going to happen, as a point that I mentioned in earlier, to say now that this demand has been created, consumer expectations has been created. What are we going to do going forward, obviously, to be able to make sure we don't create any gap and disappointments in that? Okay, next slide. Okay, and then the challenges, obviously, that we have seen in terms of the during this period as well is some of the levels of interferences. I guess that being said, there's been a lot of positives, but I think just to highlight some of the things that I guess the industry and the policymakers could be able to work on now. And then also the other issue to raise as well is that I think in this industry you realize that there is a bit of a significant lead time. So which means if you then dimension a spectrum, The second thing is that it needs to be able to have devices in the market to be able for the people to be able to use. And then there's also a bit of a lead time where from the time that you then procure equipment, which most of the equipment will be procured out of the country, then you need to be able to can allow a bit of time to be able to make sure that by the time that you are able to roll out those infrastructure benefits, the people then you can also be able to make sure that they have got the right equipment to be able to can access those networks. Because if the equipment are not in the market, then it becomes a little bit challenging to be able to balance that out. I think the thing that we have seen, which is one of the points that would come based on the lead time of the equipment requirements, it's going to be a bit of a challenge, I guess, something to think about in terms of as we get into the end of the era of the temporary spectrum, how will that then impact on the investment and the lead time? So hence, then there needs to be something that needs to be thought through as a country on what are we going to do between the end of the temporary spectrum and then until the period of when you have final spectrum assignments being done. The other issue that can be raised as well, I think, which given today discussing this with the members of parliament, which represent our people of South Africa, is about this issue on the theft and vandalism, to say how can the broader society, given how the society has seen how this infrastructure is so important, how do we bring them on board to be able to sensitize and them understand that these issues of theft and vandalism brings other costs and then also denies other people to be able to be connected to the network. Okay, we move to the next slide. Key principles, I think these are just maybe high-level principles in terms of the licensing on the high-demand spectrum. I think here, I think we're familiar with that as the people that are in the industry. It's more about the regulatory certainty. That's very, very important to make sure that it can be able to procure. The urgency of the licensing, I think that has been emphasized. We need to be able to make sure that we stimulate long-term investments, because obviously through investments, it drives the economic growth and then also drives the demands in the sector. The issue of pricing in terms of obviously how do we then position in terms of the pricing of the spectrum. This is obviously the balancing effect, because obviously a price factor has got also an impact on the ability to invest. And inclusivity, some of the principle that has been raised. And then in terms of the obligations that comes with that, to be able to make sure that is used to the maximum as well. Okay, if we move to the next slide. Some of the best practices that has been observed, I think this I'll just highlight on that, is that there needs to be a little bit of forward-looking in that, and then also there needs to be how you manage the lots. I think we kind of discussed that, mentioned a bit of that earlier in terms of how you bundle that. It becomes very much important, because obviously if it's not bundled correctly, or if not, it's more suboptimal. Also, it has got an implication in terms of the ability to provide the service. I think there's some of the pricing aspects that has been mentioned in the presentation as well. And then I think the biggest thing as well is in terms of the trade-offs between the cost of what you put in to be able to make an acquisition of the spectrum versus what you want to go as a benefit for the society. And I think this COVID has taught us quite a lot in terms of the value the ICT plays. And then therefore, we're going to have to be thought very hard in terms of balancing effect in terms of those two areas as well. And we've already seen some of the positives that ICT has been able to bring to the people during this period of COVID as well. So therefore, we need to think long term going forward, as more industries will be, as more businesses will be industrializing, as we get into this fourth industrial revolution as part of the strategy of the country, then how do we then make sure that we do this spectrum strategy in such a way that it can be able to facilitate fast rollout into the rural areas, and then also make sure that we bring as many people and industries into the digital platform. Okay, we move to the last slide. In the last slide, I think the key messages that we want to kind of bring on is the point that we have now the temporary spectrum. Obviously, the industry and that has been appreciated from what the government has done, as I've said. But then you have people behind that network. So it's not only spectrum, people are connected, people are carrying traffic, people are running businesses. And all sorts of other activities that has been facilitated by the temporary spectrum. I think then the major issue becomes what is going to happen. And I think that's something that it needs to be looked at. Needs to be thought from a country perspective, because you're going to have once from the time that the authority has given, I guess from up to the time that you might get the new persons into the hands of to facilitate the network. That could be a problem where a challenge where in terms of how do you then manage that network, that traffic that has been generated during this period, because people's behavior has changed. I think some of we have already read around the world, some of the businesses may not traditionally go back to where they were, how they were transacting. They may start completely transacting differently. There are new businesses that will come up transacting differently. And the question is going to be, how do we make sure that as an industry, with this changing behavior, we are ready for that changing behavior, so that then the industry does not become later being a challenge or a bottleneck in terms of that transformation that is required. I think the point of digital migration, I think that has been discussed. I think that is a very important point to be able to be looked at. And then the other final message is that, yes, I think the industry is looking forward to a final licensing of the spectrum. And so that they can be able to plan further, to be able to make sure that they can be able to stimulate investment. And I think we have seen the traffic is there, the growth is there. I think all what is required now is to be able to make sure that there's an investment-friendly environment that can be able to make sure that the operators can be able to drive and invest in that spectrum. I think on that note, maybe I'll ask my colleagues, Maxime and Andrew, if they want to come in. If Katharina is on the line, if she wants to say some few words that I may have left out from you.
Let's see. Hi, it's Maxime. Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, Chair. I hear a lot of echo in the background. Is it fine to continue?
Yes, please continue.
Thank you, Chair. So perhaps just as an overall sentiment, certainly coming in from the perspective of looking at the effect of the temporary spectrum, we certainly see that it was a vital move. It helped us as a country react much faster, and it was absolutely necessary to facilitate this whole new change in terms of how people interact with networks in general, ICT services in general. And from our side, I mean, we want to thank ICASA and the department in terms of DCDT with facilitating a very quick process, which we thought was critical to get going. This point that Chiletsi raises on high expectations going forward, I think is a very valid point. It is one that we all expect somewhat as consumers, but we do need to make sure that it's more than just an expectation. We do need to make sure that the planning is in place so that there can be this continued support of the what we call the new baseline in demand that has developed over the last 6 months. Chair, also to say, and this is perhaps a comment that stretches beyond just the mobile industry to other sectors and going into the new entrants, as the CSIR team have suggested, that there is a strong demand for whoever it is. The one message that we would like to leave the members with and the industry in general is all of this was made possible by quick reaction at the policy level, quick reaction at the regulatory level, but certainly also an investment commitment. And I think going forward as a country, one of the things that we do need to do is couple that investment commitment to any spectrum activities so that you can apply the benefits. Dr. Ntsimane has properly indicated, we face now the scenario where spectrum is indeed the oil that facilitates infrastructure, but similarly, the infrastructure is the engine that allows us to use the oil. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to the South African Communications Forum, Shilesi and Maxim. And now, colleagues and members of the Portfolio Committee, I'm going to request that we make our input, that we further engage with the presentation so that we can conclude and further find each other. So we've had three presentations, one from CSIR, another one from NAB, and the South African Communications Forum. I will be led by show of hands and also take inputs through inbox, yes, or chat. Honourable Mackenzie, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to all the presenters. Chairperson, I'm going to refer to my chairperson that I'm looking at now as the chair. So through you, Chair, thank you very much to all the presenters for the education and information. It's very much appreciated. If I can just start with the CSIR and Dr. Ntlatlaba. So in your opinion, would you say that you talked about infrastructure and versus services, and you seem to indicate that services are where the promise lies. Where do you, in your opinion, where do you think the most growth and opportunity for new telecoms entrants lies in this particular market? Would you say it lies in the infrastructure side, or does it lie in the services side? So that's, I would just appreciate your viewpoint on that. And then you mentioned rolling out spectrum in the 6 gigahertz band. Perhaps you could, you must excuse my ignorance, I'm not very technical on this. Is anybody using any of that spectrum in the 6 gigahertz band at the moment? And then we hear lots of, there seems to be a general sort of trend that the higher you move up the spectrum band, the more implications there are for human health. And I don't want to start a debate on 5G and microbots and anything like that. I would just like to know, moving up the spectrum, does it, in your opinion, does it increase, does it pose any health risks for people? You said unlocked, and the third question, you said unlocked shared spectrum provides additional value, and you gave us some quite substantial figures in the billions of dollars. What is that value? Can you just define that for me? How do you define that value? What is it? And then lastly, in terms of, and I really liked your idea about at a glance spectrum database that you could, like the map you showed of coverage in Limpopo, for example, where you could just look at a graphic representation and instantly see who has fiber there or who has Wi-Fi connections there, for example. I really liked that idea. But who would you see controlling and administering that database? Which entity or organization? So I'm certainly covered on that, and thank you very much. I found that very very informative. Then Ms. Bulbulia or Dr. Bulbulia, thank you very much for also for your presentation. Your organization has played a profound role in our democracy and certainly in protecting our freedoms and expanding our freedoms of expression and speech, and that's fully supported. Do you see, is there any conflict or competition between the telecom sector on the one hand and the broadcasting sector on the other when it comes to spectrum and spectrum allocation? Or are your areas of play distinctly separate? I'd be interested in knowing that. As I understand it, the WRC allocates bands for certain purposes, which is agreed on by people who then attend those conferences. Do you also send delegates to those conferences when they happen? Thank you, I'm done there. And then my last, with your indulgence, Chairperson, my last question is to the Communication Forum. Also very, very interesting presentation. In terms of spectrum bundling, I presume you're referring to contiguous bands of spectrum that are being auctioned. What would your recommendation or your suggestion be to ICASA, for example, when designing this auction? How big do those bands need to be in terms of bundling? You talk about bundling low frequency spectrum, higher frequency spectrum, but I presume you're also looking for contiguous spectrum. If you could just give me an idea around that and motivate your answer, please. Then it's interesting that we are probably the one portfolio committee or the one department that actually has a positive view of COVID-19 as a catalyst for the fourth IR and for the changes that have been forced on our society, which is a good thing. It's the one positive that we can certainly draw from this pandemic and the tragedy that it's brought with it. But and I can detect a change in emphasis from you. A year ago, it was all about releasing the spectrum, and now that we're kind of at the point where the spectrum has certainly been released for temporary usage and is about to be released permanently. Based on the auction, your emphasis seems to have changed from releasing the spectrum to what are we going to have to pay for the spectrum. Now, I find that quite interesting, and that position is interesting because obviously there would be some sort of obligation on you to provide rural coverage or coverage in areas where very little or low services, low speed services exist at the moment, and if we accept that access to internet is a basic human right, and we do want to decrease the digital divide that exists amongst our people at the moment, the best way to do that clearly would be to pose, in my opinion, to pose conditions on spectrum auctions. What would you see awaiting there? What would you see as the most important? The actual revenue that we could erase from spectrum auctions as government, or the coverage obligations that could be imposed at this moment in time? And if you accept that both of those need to be applied, what sort of weighting would you apply? Is it, 50% price, 50% coverage, or 80% price, 20% coverage, if you understand my question? And then lastly, you spoke of an investment-friendly environment. Can you define what that is, in your opinion? What would the Cyber Communications Forum consider to be the maximum investment-friendly environment that government could introduce that would encourage you to spend the billions and billions that you have locked up in your individual treasuries? Thank you very much, Chairperson. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Mackenzie. I think it will be best to take two or three questions as a go, so that we let Dr. Dlakapa to prepare the response. I'm going to hand over to Honourable Faku to also field her questions so that we can then get the responses from respective presenters. Over to you, Honorable Fak.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to members and greetings to all the guests present here today. We are indeed happy that this month is Women Month. At least was shared by a woman. So, Malibongo ikamala makhosikazi. Chairperson, I think when Chair was making the opening remarks, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee was making the opening remarks. He said that some of us are new in the sector, so we'll learn. I hope there's no right or wrong question. My first question will be to the South African Communications Forum. From your presentation, I hear that at least you are happy with the temporal spectrum that was issued by the ministry or the department. But there's still a question out there because in terms of coverage, of network coverage, it's not accessible to people that are staying in rural areas. There's a perception that people that stay in Sandton have more better network coverage than those ones that stay in Soweto. There's also, after the temporal spectrum was released by the department, the issue of data. Data is still expensive in South Africa. We're hoping at least maybe during the COVID-19 period, at least the prices of data will be a bit cheaper, but it's not the case. So I wanted to hear their view with regards to that. And secondly, to NEP, I see that you even assist the SABC when it comes to research, especially when it comes to content. As you know, that the SABC is faced with a lot of issues when it comes to content. I just wanted to check, when you do your research, do you do it quarterly, yearly, when you give them maybe a feedback, and how is the response from the SABC? Do they take the recommendations that you make to them? So I wanted to check on that. And then there's the issue of spectrum. As we know that the sector is dominated by the big guns, so I have a few questions. There's a perception out there that the advantages of allowing the spectrum to be auctioned by December is mainly due to the fact there's an opportunity for new entrants that have been providing wireless internet services using unlicensed spectrum to gain access to spectrum. So they can also provide more reliable electronic communication services across the country. However, the main disadvantage of auctioning spectrum is due to the nature of auctions. The winner being the biggest bidder takes all. There's that perception that is out there. So, and those who have deep pockets would be the winners, which will exclude the majority of SMMEs. But we are glad that at least the department has made available opportunities for new entrants through provision of the first ever wholesale open access network, which according to the policy directive should be owned by 70% black females and youth and disabled individuals. And in as much as SMMEs don't understand changes in the spectrum auctioning, XMMEs do have an opportunity to participate in the close 200 billion rand telecommunication market, which has long time excluded the previously disadvantaged people of South Africa. Is there an opportunity for SMMEs to participate in this telecom through use of tele-wide space spectrum in unused television frequencies? There's those questions because there's like SMMEs, as you know, they don't have money. So I just wanted to check with ICASA. How can SMMEs, I know that you are trying your utmost best, the perception that is out there with regards to the issue of the spectrum, how can you make sure that at least SMMEs do benefit from this program? Thanks, Chair. Come back.
Thank you, Honorable Faku. Can I give Honorable Majozi a chance to also reflect and then request the respondents to respond? Over to you, Honorable Majosi. I've just gone through your message now.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to honorable members and also to the presenters who are presenting from different departments. My network is bad, so we have load shedding. That is why then I'm not able to show my face. I think some of the things were covered by my colleagues in with concerns of as all the presenters, as we appreciate and welcome all the presentation and very informative information that we needed to know as the committee. But what I would like to know is that there are players in the sector, in the ICT sector, that are big players like MTN, Vodacom, which have an infrastructure already. But then there are new players on the ground. How then do we make sure that these companies also who do not have the infrastructure maybe to benefit on the spectrum, how do they then make sure that they also get an opportunity to benefit from it, and without an infrastructure, how do they get help to make sure that at least they get some sort of assistance in that? And I'm not posing this to any specific presenter or presentation, but I'm posing it to everyone who has spoken, because I think they inter alia within each other. And how then, with maybe the information that we have received, how do we make sure that there's a healthy competition when the licensing is released by ICASA, to make sure that other players do not get crumbs only, but they also get an opportunity to be in the and what study informs the release of the spectrum, if maybe we can get that, so that we know that it will be a healthy competition between the big players and also the new players that are on the sector. And maybe just when the spectrum is released, how sure are we that it will benefit also the people of South Africa, ordinary people of South Africa, because we are here representing also our constituencies, which are people who vote for us to be in parliament. How then are we sure that when the spectrum is released, and when these companies start bidding for it, how do we make sure that they don't inflate prices to make sure that maybe they generate what they have bidded for in the licensing of spectrum? Also, maybe the last question is that in fact, it's not a question, it's a concern that we have, as I think Honorable Faku touched on it as well, in the broadcasting sector. How can we help that SABC becomes par with other broadcasting that are there, like your DSTV and so forth, multi-choice, to make sure that they play relevant things and things that South Africans would want maybe to also watch and so forth, because now it seems as if it has lost touch with playing relevant programs and so forth. So I just wanted to know, I know that Honorable Faku touched on it, that how can we then help to make sure that this entity also survives and it's able to sustain itself within its programs that it plays during the broadcasting. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Majosi.
Please note me for the next round.
Yes, Chair. I don't know whether to use your privilege now of being the chair, but let's proceed with the three.
Yes, that's what I'm saying,
yes.
For the next.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Ntahlapa, can you please respond? And then I think there's also some questions that are directed to ICASA as an add-on to all our presenters. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And thanks for the questions that have come through. There might have been some time when the maintenance people left to my office were drilling and I missed part of the questions. But if I did miss it, please remind me. The first question from Honorable McKenzie there is about the services as well as the infrastructure. I think the short question is that there are opportunities involved. When you get a new standard coming in or you have people, you have the bigger impact coming in and you need to increase your infrastructure site, there's an opportunity, of course, there. And I think the understanding has to be that the infrastructure is not the same everywhere. So there are cases where you have your Sandton's and your Johannesburg, Pretoria, Cape Town, where you have quite a big density, and the infrastructure that you need to have there is very different from when you go to the outlying areas, in the hills of the KwaZulu-Natal there. You would realize that the density, the areas there are quite sparse. And the kind of infrastructure that you need to develop in those areas, as well as the kind of infrastructure that you need to develop in the more dense areas, is different. Now, currently, you have the infrastructure covering the dense areas very well. And even when you go to the 5G, it will be easier to extend that kind of infrastructure there. So you may not see there as there's been a lot of opportunities for new players to come in. Of course, there's always an opportunity for new players to come in, but you would find that there's already a lot of players there. But when you go to outside those areas, the infrastructure is different. And this is where you may want to also consider different ways of using spectrum to develop that particular infrastructure, because the current standards that we are using will not are basically meant for where there's a bigger density. You have one base station, it covers a lot more people instead of that. So the opportunity for the outlying areas are those that will then require the spectrum that is currently occupied by broadcasting, analog broadcasting in 700 and 800 to be cleared. Then that will enable the opportunity for the infrastructure development there. However, coming to the services are very diverse. Once you have the infrastructure, you probably don't even know what kind of services you're going to run. We have an idea of the services now. But if you then include more or less access to the infrastructure on an open access basis, and you enable additional players on the services, you actually don't know what services you're going to get. There will be a lot of innovation on the services, there. So that's an important way, and there's a lot more, opportunities on the services that there are in the infrastructure without necessarily thinking that the infrastructure, there's no opportunity at all. So I think that that covers that, more so when we come to the fourth industrial revolution, we'll have new services that are coming on board on top of that infrastructure. On the spectrum in the 6 gigahertz, it's I think CASA can answer that a lot better than I can do. However, that is occupied mostly by the space usage, more than the terrestrial type of usage. There's some space research, but allocations that are there, and mostly to the use of the satellite to Earth stations that are using that spectrum. There's some maritime usage of that spectrum. But what you then realize is that because you have those type of usage of spectrum, there are a lot of opportunities to be able to share that spectrum and use it and make it available for additional other usage, where by making sure that there's no there's no interference to the current users. So there's a lot more opportunities that are appearing there. So on the implications on the health, I didn't think we will get to that part, and I don't have my colleagues who are, you know, more knowledgeable around the issues of the implications on the health side. What I could just indicate is that at the CSIR, we haven't actually been active in that particular research, but we have been following the publications coming from the likes of the WHO and the international agencies. What one of my colleagues have highlighted, who's working closer to this area, is the fact that the Department of Health has endorsed the report coming from one of the international agencies that says that creates the limits for the, you know, the emissions coming out of those base stations. That basically indicates the safe limits. If you transmit beyond those limits, you might cause the health issues. But there have been a lot of studies that have determined the limits, and if we remain within those limits, that we will be able to protect the citizens. Having said that, perhaps maybe what may be missing is to actually confirm and have the reporting being done by the infrastructure developers to ensure that they are staying within those limits. So the limits have been endorsed, but the information that I have is that there is no way of enforcing. Maybe there has not been a way of enforcing that those limits are observed. So that's an important part to say there are limits, but says this is a safe emissions that they can have. We just need to make sure that everybody else follows that as we believe that they are doing so. So on the shared spectrum, I did look at some figures, as I indicated. And in terms of how does it create value. So if we take, for instance, the case of the UK, where they basically enabled sharing of the spectrum that they had already assigned to the operators that are operating in that country, but by realizing that they may not be using the spectrum across the whole country, they decided to award additional shared access licenses. Right. Some of the licenses were very low power, and some of them were medium power to be able to cover the rural areas in that country. The additional licenses that were there, there were about 17 unique licenses. So you actually had 17 new players that came on board
and could actually bring in the networks that plug the gaps that exist. And this we're talking about the UK, which already has a very small gap in terms of the people that have not been on the internet. I think the last numbers for South Africa was that we had internet usage only up to 54%, so that's about 46% of people not having internet access. And if we enable additional people who could otherwise say that they want to cover a small area to be able to get in, you'll get additional. So the locations that have been given those licenses, and I said unique licenses in the sense that it's unique companies that have come in, but each of them can ask for a license for a number of locations. And British Telecoms is one that has 1,368 licenses. It means it has 1,368 locations where it has asked for the licenses to add to the network that it has. The unique ones is about 686 unique locations across those, but many other operators would be waiting across that. So this, in a sense, says once in the country here, we have so many licensed operators who have been looking for spectrum and mostly are using only Wi-Fi. Those operators could have additional access to spectrum if we were to allow the shared access. And then they could be able to complement their Wi-Fi networks with the current spectrum that is not fully utilized. So the value would then be increased there, because if you have additional, additional players, you are increasing on their businesses there. The final question comes to the control of the database. I think here we do have many different ways of having the database. In the countries that I've looked at, and some of them I've visited and had discussions with them around their databases like those, they would either have the regulator running that database or the regulator designating another entity that has the capability to do that, to run that database on their own, on their behalf. I have not seen it where it is the department, is the government department directly that runs that. I've seen where there's a regulator or is a designated entity that is designated by the regulator to be able to do that. This perhaps is because the regulator already licenses the operators and can have that as a license condition with the licensees that they should be able to report certain parameters to the database operator in that. Now, in the country, CSIR has the required infrastructure and the capabilities to be able to do that. We are already doing that on one spectrum band, working with the regulator. So that there is already something that we can build on top of that. But of course, this has to be, in my view, that it has to be something that is given as an obligation to the regulator to do, whether the regulator will then go and designate additional entity to be able to do it on their behalf, who have maybe the capabilities that can complement them. That's what they could look to do. I did miss the questions during the time when Honorable Fakwa was asking the questions. That's when there was drilling next to me, so I don't know whether there were any questions that were directed to me on that one. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Nhlanhla. There's one on health risk. I don't know if you captured that one as well from Honorable Mackenzie. how he referred to the higher you go and the introduction of 6G as well. The higher you go with the spectrum, there are continued concerns on the implications of human health. And yes, I think then the last part was the one on the database, which you have just answered, and where control should lie. Can you touch base on the health aspects, and then we move to Honorable Fagu's input?
Okay. I actually touched on that, and maybe in general was that I could bring other colleagues who can talk in depth on that particular aspect, while emphasizing that there's the Department of Health has actually endorsed the limits that have been set by one of the international entities that do this kind of research to look at that. So it's an international standard that has endorsed that below certain limits of emissions, the transmissions are safe for human beings, and those have been endorsed by the Department of Health.
And the meaning of investment friendly environment from your presentation?
That was in SACF, I think it was from the SACF presentation.
Oh,
and
okay.
I'll leave that to them.
Yeah. Okay then. Nadia, can you please also come in?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to extend my profuse apologies because I'm going to have to disconnect for a medical appointment. My colleagues are on the line and they will take forward any questions. Just to remind Honourable Members of Parliament, because the NAB is an industry body that represents the broadcasting industry, we're very pleased that our technical engineers do engage with government departments in preparing for participation in World Radio Conference and ITU events. Some of our members are also rapporteurs on some of these committees, and I think Thabo will assist further to give more clarity in that regard. I think the key issue, I think the issue is raised around competition in the industry. Absolutely healthy competition is exactly in the best interest of users, end users, consumers, audiences. And takeaway from this is how we plan as a country in the best public interest to ensure that services are diverse and robust and that they are services that are not in any way skewed in one direction or the other. I think that Thabo mentioned the issue around sharing studies and particularly issues around the IMT ban, and perhaps he'll follow on with that. But my profuse apologies, colleagues, just to thank you once again for this time with you, and I'll hand over to Thabo if he's on the line, or else also my apologies, our Deputy Chair Kwezi Mthengena has also been on the line, and Tawana is also still on the line, so I'll hand over to them. Thank you, Thabo. Thanks,
thank
Madam
you.
Chair.
Thank you, Nadia. Also, thank you for the deliberate efforts by your members on GBV. I just wanted to confirm that whilst you're still online, that we have been observing that deliberate trend to assist the nation in with GBV initiatives. Thank you. Over to you, Thabo.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Nadia. I think the question was by Honorable Mackenzie around competition on spectrum between broadcasting and telecoms, and the issue of attendance of the NAB members at WRC. As Nadia did say, yes, we do attend our WRC as broadcasters, and we participate in the preparatory work that leads up to the WRC. We participate together with the telecoms industry on that. Now, in terms of competition, I think generally as people involved in spectrum as such, we prefer not to look at it as competition, but how do we share the resources that are available to ensure that we meet the needs of the public. Even at WRC, I mean, the decisions that are made at WRC are consensus driven. which means we have to agree, we have to compromise and get to a final agreement where we agree that our particular bands will be used by broadcasting services and others will be used by telecoms players, and we will share other specific bands. So yes, as I said, I prefer not to call it competition, but rather that we find ways of sharing resources. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Thabo. And to South African Communications Forum. Shilesi?
Thanks, yeah. Maxim will take the questions.
Okay. Over to you, Maxim.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Chair, I'm going to try to start my video, but my connection isn't great due to load shedding this morning, so hopefully you guys are able to see me. So good morning, everyone. Chair, if I may, let me perhaps start then in the sequence that the questions were raised. Honourable McKenzie, you asked a question about spectrum bundling. Now, there's two parts to this conversation. The context that we raised, the initial query on and sort of tried to create some sort of sensitization was to the fact that when you're auctioning spectrum or indeed any other process in terms of making spectrum available, there are multiple approaches that could be taken, and one sees many examples of this across the world. More recently, we've seen a drift away from this bundled approach that says that there must be a little bit of low band, so 700, 800. There must be a little bit of mid band, 1800, 2600, as an example, and a little bit of high band grouped together. And ostensibly, the intention at the time, one can imagine, was to facilitate both rural coverage as well as spectrum for high-density urban metros. Of course, times have shifted, and quite dramatically so. In this new world, where we have 5G as an example, there are new players that have arrived that have a different business model from the traditional one that was centered largely around voice coverage. So today, you'll find in a number of countries around the world that there are players that are only deploying 5G spectrum. Their business model is only focused on high-density areas and industrial applications. So one of the things that we are suggesting is that we need to start to move away from the forced bundling as we go into some sort of assignment process. Now, that does not mean that players that have customers with demand in each area would not want a particular block of spectrum in every one of those bands. Indeed, I think one of the things that the COVID process has shown us, and you know, thanks to the temporary spectrum allocation, we've got some good learnings to show that there is indeed demand in the current framework from customers using broadband applications for spectrum in all of those bands. Now, going forward, what we propose is that there needs to be a bit of a rethink about clustering bands. Certainly from the large mobile players, you will likely see demand in each one of them, but that demand may vary. For those that are not able to invest in the infrastructure in rural areas, they may certainly choose to focus in the metro areas. But equally, for those that are trying to stretch out their coverage, and certainly you would expect that the likes of MTN, Vodacom, Cell C, etc., fall into that category, where they have an incentive to want to expand their coverage base and their customer base, there will be a demand for low-band spectrum. To your question about contiguity, now, this is also, I would think, a topical point. In terms of contiguity, one of the points that the industry in large has been arguing for some years now, and I must say we've come a long way in terms of the authority in terms of ICASA as well as the department really understanding this dynamic, is that we've moved away from voice-centric services where we could talk about assignments of 5 megahertz of spectrum. You know, in the voice world, that made sense. You could compete for a block of 5 megahertz. Today, you'll see examples in the press where some of the operators are claiming that if they don't get a minimum of 50 megahertz of 5G spectrum, they're not able to launch a differentiated 5G service. It will be more of the same. So we certainly think that there needs to be a good conversation on contiguity. Again, very good learnings from the COVID process. What we saw was that the blocks that were assigned were useful. They were practical to deploy in large measure. And certainly they brought a lot of benefit in terms of the capacity that was made available. Honorable McKenzie, if we go to, the shift in view. So you are right in that, we wanted to get past the first hurdle to a large extent as an industry. And that first hurdle was, let's get to a spectrum assignment process. For a variety of reasons, this was caught up. One would argue for more than 10 years, some were in process. But now we're at a point where we're talking about what are the details of that assignment process? What's the essence of the trade-offs that need to be made? And as my colleague Shilepsi has correctly pointed out, there are indeed significant trade-offs that we have to consider. If we look at the efficiency of deployment, what is clear is that the mobile industry in South Africa, at least, has been one of the shining pillars of growth in terms of its ability to leverage capital and investment and deliver actual networks. Now, I take the points that were raised by both Honorable Faku and Honorable Majozi to say that it may not necessarily have had the expected impact in some of the outlying areas and some of the rural areas. And this is something that we are in ongoing conversation to try and unravel and unpack and actually resolve as far as practically possible. So my sense about it is that if we talk about the new conversation is very much one about how do we manage those trade-offs, how do we find a balance. The country is, at least by our count, in a dire situation when it comes to revenue. And the spectrum auction process will certainly be a valuable opportunity. But there needs to be a trade-off, with social obligations against revenue, against expectations on delivery. What we are fairly committed on is that we are committed on investing in an environment that allows for sustained delivery and for sustained network performance. You see, if we don't get the sustained network performance, then it almost leads to an inevitable spiral into lower levels of investment, simply because consumers will start to flee. So I think that is something that we think is critical, not just for our own performance, but actually to maintain the growth of the economy. Because the last thing you want as a country in the current state is to have a situation where lower levels of investment lead to lower performance and lead to lower expectations of performance from consumers, thereby diminishing the economic benefit. Then, Honorable McKenzie, you did ask this question about what would you consider as an investor-friendly environment. I think it's fair to say that at least between the two largest operators and potentially including Cell C and MTN, that the investment envelope on the radio side for the last 10 years has easily approached 100 billion rand. Now, that investment envelope comes off the backs of ensuring that all stakeholders are at least balanced. I take the point from Mr. McInerney that you never really get to everyone being happy, but it is key that we achieve that balance, because if we have any chance of approaching the investment levels that are required to get the full benefit out of mobile spectrum, then we need to continue on that trajectory and potentially even accelerate it. If I look at Dr. Ntsubane, you made reference a little bit earlier to the figures from the UK in terms of the mobile penetration. And if I just do some sort of quick calculation, that 52 billion that you talk about, and if you look at the 60% on the mobile, translates to 5.3 trillion rand of value, as opposed to the figure that you mentioned for South Africa, sitting at just under about 100 billion. Now, these are figures that help us understand the context of what is achievable once you have the right investment profile. And we think that that should be some of the things that we look at. Investors, for better or worse, require returns to continue investing. Now, we are of the mind that this is not something that is restricted only to the mobile sector. It applies across all sectors, and we believe that the environment needs to be supportive to encourage that type of investment going forward and potentially accelerate it. Okay, so if I then move on, and Honorable Fox, I must say your questions are indeed challenges for us. They're challenges for us because of two fronts. On the one hand, we are trying to do our absolute best in line with what I now understand the industry terms of social compact or a social contract, where we are trying to place a lot more emphasis on inclusive delivery of services. However, there are certain factors that are somewhat beyond our control. You've raised the point about accessibility for people staying in rural areas. And I think right now where we've sort of landed as an industry is that the current frameworks for investment don't easily satisfy all areas. We are struggling with that. One of the questions that we've made through multiple engagements is that we need to talk about a different model of engaging on rural development of infrastructure, ICT infrastructure, as well as coverage. That said, we are continuously innovating ourselves. We are finding newer and better ways of deploying services. Recall that in a number of areas, what we've done is where, for example, infrastructure has been lacking, we've been looking at putting up sites that are powered by solar. We need to work in partnership, not only with government, but with the communities, and we're trying to do that. One of the main issues that we face is when you put up the infrastructure, aside from there being a sustainable business model, there, of course, need to be other factors that support it. And my colleague, Suletsi, has mentioned that we still continuously face challenges with regard to security of infrastructure in these areas. In fact, that point extends beyond rural areas, even to the metro areas. And you may recall in the press recently, there were some articles about our experience in Soweto where the infrastructure is stolen so often that we can't even achieve suitable lead times in replacing that infrastructure, let alone the lost investment. So these are things where I think a greater degree of engagement will certainly help to move us as an industry forward, but also provide more sustained benefit for consumers going forward. On the issue of data pricing, you will recall we've made significant inroads. We have tried to balance this continued investment profile against the expectations of consumers, and we certainly take those to heart. You will, and we're happy to actually introduce the members to the platforms that ourselves, as well as the other operators, have put in place in terms of. So certainly, I can talk from the Vodacom side, the ConnectU platform that we've put into place to improve access to data for consumers. What we do believe there needs to be a balance in is the balance between that which is absolutely required for certain essential services versus that data which is almost for premium services, for want of a better terminology. And I think that is going to be critical if we're going to achieve this meeting of a mind, of minds rather, in terms of the social contract. Chair, then Honorable Majozi fielded a few questions. You know, and one of the main ones was, how will the spectrum benefit the ordinary citizens of South Africa? Which I think is really a topic or question to make it more real for the average South African. So in our mind, what spectrum will do is it will give you a multiplier effect on the infrastructure that you already have. It will ensure that there is better capacity almost unilaterally. It will allow for more focused investment in as opposed to duplicate infrastructure that was not required. Just some background technically, what we often have to do is when the demand for services increases and there's no additional spectrum available, we have to put up duplicate sites. We call them infill sites, but in essence, that densification would not be required if you had additional spectrum, and that money could go to enhancing coverage in other areas. Chair, then, in terms of the questions about the studies that inform the release of spectrum, I am aware that there are a number of studies done by various consultants and that both the ICASA and the department are involved in those studies.
Okay,
and then perhaps just to close out on two points, I noted the comment from my colleague Mr. McKinney in terms of this competition on spectrum between broadcasters and mobile operators. I agree with Thabo on the basis that we certainly, as we all approach WRC, approach it from an SA delegation perspective. We park our respective organizations' interests. What might be of interest to the committee, as opposed to looking at it as broadcast versus mobile, is to look at what services consumers need and want going forward. Because I think this is probably where you'll find a better answer to your question of how should you go about apportioning the spectrum. And then I think Dr. Detlaffe referred to ICNAP in his response. That was the organization that looked at the heating effect. And that is certainly something that that we as mobile operators subscribe to as well. Just for the members' interest, I went and got the exact definition. So ICNIRP is the name of the organization. It stands for International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection. And this is an affiliate of the World Health Organization. So typically most operators do tests on site and use ICNAP as the potentially reference standard in terms of determining protection levels for consumers. Chair, that mostly wraps up my feedback. I hope I've covered all of the points that the members have raised.
Yes, thank you very much, Martin. I think some of the questions were also related to ICASA's process of licensing, and you really responded from the side of the licensee. I'm going to request Leah in particular to reflect briefly on the aspect and the impact of ICASA's process on the SMME, and also say, because there's really been good responses in terms of the temporary spectrum assignment by ICASA, one would then say that we've resolved to also seek feedback as the authority in terms of how far have we gone or how far have licenses gone in terms of the assignment and the use of the spectrum. It's a midpoint report that we are seeking so that we are able to view and understand the impact of this move from the regulator's side, and also how then is the ordinary citizen benefiting. So that report will be coming just before to us before the end of August, as per the request we have done to the parties concerned. Thank you. Over to you, Leah, briefly, and then we take the last round of questions.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honourable members and colleagues. I apologise, my network is a little poor, so I'll keep my camera off. Just to respond directly to the question around the SMMEs, so in terms of the design of the auction by the authority and what we're looking at, the auction design is geared towards encouraging participation by SMMEs, considering the points that were made earlier by the honourable members that SMMEs do not have strong financial capacity to participate in the processes. So what has been done so far is that certain lots will be set aside to encourage participation by SMMEs. We will also have various obligations around open access and ensuring that successful applicants provide open access to MVNOs and other SMMEs. We'll also note that the wireless open access network licensing process and the entity in itself is also geared towards empowerment, and it's geared towards encouraging SMMEs to get into the ICT sector and participate more fully in the sector by reducing the economic burden required to get into the sector. So also within the licensing process for the wireless open access network, there are various concessions and obligations that will be imposed that will make it easier for MVNOs to participate in the process. They will encourage transformation by increasing the level of empowerment that is required in order to participate in the wireless open access network licensing processes. I think in a nutshell and at a high level, that is really what we are gearing towards doing, and the ITA will be a lot clearer in terms of the specific requirements that will be imposed on successful applicants on the wireless open access network, as well as successful applicants to the auction. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Leah. Any other questions? I have noted the chairperson of the portfolio committee. Over to you, Honorable Maneli.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I think a number of questions would have already been asked. I just want to ask a few. One relates to the presentation by CSIR. I just want to check in relation to spectrum sharing as it links to infrastructure sharing. I'm raising this on the basis of current reality that infrastructure sharing, whether you call it roaming, has been left to be more of commercial deals between those that enter into such agreements. And as I say, it's linked then to spectrum in the sense that I think SACF called it the engine and the oil, that yes, that could be the oil, but you need the engine so that you pour the oil. What do you suggest should be the way to handle that, given the experiences so far in the country, especially for new entrants into this sector, because you can, through such agreements, be taken out without you knowing, which therefore defeats the transformation agenda of the country. So that will be the first point. Second point relates to possible perpetuation of digital divide. In that, as you correctly said, once you look at getting, for example, to 5G deployment, it also talks to the manufacturing side in terms of devices that would be compatible to that. The pricing, therefore, can also cause the perpetuation of that digital divide. What is being suggested or recommended? Maybe the other sector players will also answer to this. What's being recommended in the relevant structures like ITU in ensuring that the poor is not left out in these technological developments? I think this is important now after the post-COVID situation, where the unemployment would have increased and people still expect that you fulfill what you said as social, as political and economic, even to the poor. So that will be just one point. So a question with regard to what has been raised by SACF, which I thought CASA would still respond to, because of the committee we had interest on that. And I'm happy that it's raised frankly, like it's raised here. that you have temporary spectrum, then you invest on infrastructure in relation to 5G, and what happens when this is withdrawn. I think that matter came up in the presentation, which we have raised as the committee before. But the other side of that question is whether there would not be perception that those that got it and deployed are already having that spectrum with them, therefore had an unfair advantage, whilst on the other side, withdrawing it would mean that there is no recognition that there's been deployment of such infrastructure. What has been the proposal from your side to mitigate on that, I'm saying also as a sector, to mitigate on that so that you deal with the perception issue of an unfair advantage, but at the same time ensuring that there's a recognition for the infrastructure that has been deployed. Lastly, NAB. I just wanted to check because you raised a number of issues that relate to policy and regulation, which is coming over a number of years, which is a way of hampering what needs to happen in the broadcasting sector. Just to check whether these matters have been raised in the joint advisory teams that you have, where the department is also advised accordingly, as well as the regulator. But more to say that it would be helpful for us to know so that we also know whether there is some role that Parliament needs to play in ensuring that those get addressed. Maybe the last point on NAP would be, with technology advancement, you also indicated that you are also moving with times. I think of interest to us again is return on investment, that the country has been advancing, that we should speed up the implementation of DTT. As to whether the new technological advancements are also compatible to what we have, or does that mean dropping everything we have and looking at something else? I'm raising this because some of your members, as NAP, would have already been suggesting that that may not be the route to go, this technology getting obsolete and so on, and therefore new technologies make it easy in that way, whereas government would have invested over time a lot of money in this regard. Take us into confidence on that. Thank you, Chair of the Session.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Can we please respond, colleagues? And
Chair?
Also receive, yes. I'm unable to see.
It's me, Honourable Fark. I've got network problems. So my
okay.
I think NAP did not respond to the question that I've asked them with regards to their research, which they do for the broadcasting. I asked them a question, especially with the challenges that the SABC has in terms of content and other stuff. Is there research maybe on a quarterly basis, or do they do it yearly? I wanted them to respond to that. And with the recommendation maybe they make to the broadcasting, is there any positive response on what they recommend to them? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Fako. I was about to remind Tulwana about that. She's on standby from NAB to further reflect on their research and also on the issue of quality of content of programs and how they can be premium based on your question. Over to you, colleagues. I don't know how we are going to tackle this, but the first question was to CSIR from Honourable Maneli. And then I've seen Dr. Barron's hand. Is your hand up, Andrew? Okay. And then Tulwana to come forth as well. Thank you. Over to you, colleagues.
Thank you, Chair. If I can continue. I think this issue of spectrum sharing versus infrastructure sharing, I think those are two components of enabling additional players and making sure that we can be able to use up the resources in a much more useful way. So the infrastructure sharing would necessarily be what has been addressed by the policy that came out in 2016 a lot more, where you could have a small number of infrastructure developers who will then make their infrastructure available for other players to work on that. Now, what has been brought forth by that policy is complementing what has already been happening. What has already been happening is in terms of the contracts, the commercial contracts that are made between the different players. What the policy was bringing up was to say that should be on open access basis. That should not be subject to the commercial deals that may not be public, which basically is trying to run away from the issue of saying, I can decide who should share my infrastructure. And in fact, even if I have decided who can share my infrastructure, I can decide to charge differently for that. And the policy was bringing forth to say, once you have got the spectrum and you have been able to develop this, to build this infrastructure, you must make it available on an open access basis. So it's saying the infrastructure should be available for others to use. Now, the sharing of infrastructure dovetails a bit with the spectrum, because in some cases, and as it's the case with the mobile industry, you have the spectrum, you build the infrastructure, then you can bring in additional what they call the MVNOs to provide services on top of your infrastructure. But if you look on the other hand, on the broadcasting side, and you look at the fact that the broadcasters themselves get spectrum, but actually Semtech builds the infrastructure for them. There they have the spectrum. They can share the infrastructure that Semtech builds, but Semtech builds the infrastructure for them with their own spectrum. This could also be one of the other things that can happen. Now that's very different from, that's slightly different from the spectrum sharing, because spectrum sharing then enables new infrastructure players to come on board. And I think the discussion has been that whoever is an infrastructure player needs a lot of spectrum to be able to provide better services, to also avoid having to unnecessarily densify the network. They need additional bit of spectrum, which means the amount of spectrum is not enough to support a whole number of infrastructure players. So you can actually, on a national basis, have smaller number of infrastructure players to do that. The spectrum sharing that we are talking about is to say, having done that, if you say that at the national level you may have, let's say we continue to have the seats that we have, for argument's sake, then, and those seats, some of them cannot reach the whole country, then if you open up the secondary market, some of the infrastructure players, they may not be interested in the national play. They may be interested in a local play, so they could actually get the spectrum to use there. So that's slightly different, because you're bringing in new infrastructure players, whereas when you have sharing on the infrastructure, you bring in more service, you know, players. So on the on the comment on the perpetuation of a digital divide, I think partially there is a link to the previous questions around the sharing. I think Matsim, when he was responding to the previous questions, he did highlight on the point that I highlighted before that the business models will be different for different operators. Others will have spectrum, but they will have a different model, business model that says we are not going to provide voice, we are just going to provide data and also data in these particular areas, which then means the people that they are not providing to will be left without any infrastructure to cover them. And we have a lot of, we have seen that there are many other people who may be interested in covering those. There are a lot of community networks that are developing that could be able to do that. So basically it links back to having secondary access to spectrum. And it seems like that having secondary access to spectrum could also be another way of enabling those to be covered. In addition to the fact that this is maybe where the state intervention should come in with the universal service access funds to enable the areas that may otherwise not be able to be covered commercially by the big players, that there could be a usage of those funding to incentivize the smaller players to go and cover those areas as well. I think I've covered those areas. I think just to make sure that we get where there may not be a lot of commercial interest, we could use the universal service access to certify the development of infrastructure there. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can we have Tulwana?
Thank you, Chair. Just to respond to the question that was raised about the policy processes, particularly the audiovisual paper that has been outstanding, just to confirm that we have as the NAB raised it at various forums, and we've also raised it at various interventions where there have been policy processes initiated either by the department itself or even policy processes that are initiated by the authority. Especially because, unfortunately, we currently do have very uneven competition. And so even whether we are talking about sports broadcasting rights or whether we are talking about whether or not overall there's fair competition in the landscape, what we've often raised is that as far as the regulatory jurisdiction of the authority, it really is focusing on licensed broadcasters. However, as we know, there has been a proliferation of other online content platforms, and this has actually distorted competition in the industry. And so the issue of the audiovisual paper has been one that has been longstanding. And just to also link it to the question that was raised around also issues pertaining to the SABC as well, as the public broadcaster, looking at the landscape overall of the broadcasting sector, when you now have this unfair competition with the introduction of other online platforms, and then you have an SABC that has the mandate that it does certainly impact on its ability to deliver quite effectively on its mandate. I do, however, need to emphasize for the benefit of the members is the NAB as a consensus-based organization does not really touch on competition issues that are specific to a particular member. And so the SABC, as a member of the NAB, we don't really delve deeply into some of the issues pertaining to its mandate or some of the competition or content-related issues that the SABC sometimes presents on. With respect, we don't really engage quite extensively on those, but we do acknowledge that as a public broadcaster, it plays a very key and critical role in the entire ecosystem of the broadcasting industry as a whole. And so where we can, we do support as the NAB and make inputs whether it's a public broadcasting colloquium or the review of the public broadcaster process, we do make input generally on very high level principal issues, issues around ensuring that it's adequately funded, issues around looking at the overall ecosystem of the broadcasting industry, as I've said. And then as far as the question on the research that the NAB conducts, we really do respond to issues that are raised by members. And so we don't have a set time within which or set intervals at which we conduct research, but we certainly do look at very topical issues and we would conduct our research around that and host seminars and roundtables and invite sector experts or subject matter experts to present on those cases. And one of the most recent research that we conducted was looking at how our commercial radio broadcasters have really responded to the COVID-19 pandemic and how we have supported government in ensuring that we do make our services available for the dissemination of information. And our chairperson right now also highlighted how the NAB also developed some response around one of the pandemics that the country is facing, that being GBV. And so we respond to issues as they develop. We respond to our requests but from our members. And we also look at the availability of resources, and really that guides us as to how we make or how we develop research. And our research is always available. We always make it available to the authority. We try and engage a wide variety of stakeholders because we do canvass very topical issues, issues that are facing the sector as a whole and that have wide-reaching implications on even some of the regulations that are developed. The chairperson also raised the issues around technological advancements and how we as the NAB engage on that. I'd like to hand over to Thabo to just take members through that particular issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Tulana. Over to you, Thabo, and then Maxim will come in.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Tulana, for that. Yes, in terms of the technological advancements, I think operating in the technology space is very difficult to ignore technological advancements. But we have to also note that there is investment that was done in as an example, DTT. And is it time to let DTT go? From an organizational perspective, I will speak from a multi-choice perspective now. We don't think it is that time as yet. Operating in Africa, we see DTT actually thriving in certain parts of Africa. And I think that is driven by a lot of policy and regulatory support on DTT. There are a lot of players in this space, so we do see some opportunity for DTT to play in South Africa. At what level, we cannot really predict the future right now, but yes, the number of technological advancements that we see, I think they give the public the opportunity to have that choice between different platforms. We've seen also the launch of ETV's free-to-air satellite platform, which has given a number of viewers the opportunity to actually move to that platform. So I think from a country perspective, we are seeing the public actually getting a lot of choice in terms of what platforms they access the content on. So yeah, if I have to respond directly to that question, I say DTT has a role to play in South Africa. I think we just have to try and move as quickly as possible to get that platform commercially available, and let us see how the public actually takes it. I think that is it from my side, Chair.
Thank you, Thabo. Are there any other questions? I'm not sure whether I missed the response on the roaming question from and commercial deals from Honorable Maneli. Did we get that response? But over to you, Maxim. Maybe you can assist along the way.
Thank you, Chair. Let me try my camera again. Chair, are you able
yes.
to hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Chair, I will try to address the question from Honorable Maneli as well, although I understand that the may actually be perhaps more intended for some of the other members. Let me add a little bit of context. So I think the conversation so far has centered on how can we do the best for the country. And in my mind, one of the things that that is certainly topical is making sure that we have the greatest efficiency and extending out the services that we have today and certainly trying to keep up with the expectations that have been established during the COVID period. Che, it's probably worth adding two particular comments from the SACF part that we have raised in our presentation, and that I thank Dr. Letlape for also emphasizing. We have spoken about a lot of the factors that influence the extension of coverage. But one of the things that we all are aware of but haven't actually considered in terms of the way forward was with regard to DTT migration. Now, I appreciate the comments from our colleagues from NAB and certainly Mr. McInerney. I think we are not at the position yet where we are going to give up on DTT. That's certainly not the position from the operator side. But what we do need to do is we need to have a little bit more certainty as to the process that will unfold. My understanding is that ICASA has been working on an accelerated migration process together with Centec, and we are quite hopeful to that process. But it is key that we ensure the process unfolds in line with the timing that was proposed. And I think this is also relevant for that question about how do we extend services into rural and outlying areas. If we look at the spectrum itself that is somewhat used today by 700 and 800 in terms of the DTT services and the analog broadcast service, this is the right type of frequency to extend services into outlying areas. It has the greatest possible reach and will allow for the most efficient infrastructure deployment. So, Chair, one of our key messages and a very strong message, I think, from both the CSR and ourselves is that the release of the digital dividend spectrum is going to be key to maximizing infrastructure deployment and efficiency. To Honorable Farquhar's message, this is going to be one of the key requirements in terms of extending services to rural and outlying areas. Chair, if we look at the question of spectrum sharing, I think there's also a context on timing that may not have come through, and I appreciate that Dr. Nsabane has certainly mentioned this in his presentation, but maybe worth re-emphasizing. The conversations about spectrum sharing are still at a very early stage of process. In other words, these models are in the infancy in deployment. Certainly, if we look at even the UK case, the 17 licensees are still dependent in a large number of those areas on infrastructure from the incumbents. Ofcom, the UK regulator, has been very clear in their findings documents that they are not quite sure where this process is going to land. And one of the things they acknowledge is that as they move forward, if demand in these areas develops, they can't prevent in their current licensing regime, the incumbents from going into those areas as primary licensees. Now, they're not sure what to do with this problem because that means that an operator, a secondary licensee, may go develop a business model, develop the market in an area, and somebody else comes in. But they are acutely aware that this is a challenge they're going to face. And that is also why, to a large extent, they've constrained it to very small assignments of spectrum on a secondary basis. And what we need to think about is, what is the process that we want to unfold nationally? In other words, do we want to look at these pilot cases, and some go as far as calling them experiments in regulation, as the main emphasis for the next short while, meaning the next year to 2 years? Or do we want to develop the prospects for these type of licensing regimes going into the future, but rather focus on leveraging of the current regime in terms of licensing spectrum in the next short while? And this is an important thought for us as we start to figure out what our national priorities are. So, Chair, I think those are sort of the main comments I had on that front. Suffice to say, we supported of Dr. Insubane's proposal that the USA, the Universal Service Access Fund, be used to promote development in these rural areas. Certainly, we think that that could help to bridge the gap in terms of the business models and the funding models that are required to roll out infrastructure in those areas. And it is a valuable tool in our arsenal in addressing coverage for disenfranchised consumers that are in outlying areas. So, Chair, then to go to the question, the specific question of Honourable Maneli, I think part of our answer to this is really a response to the effect of saying, well, we're at the point today where we recognize that this investment in infrastructure is going to be a key one going forward. I think what we also understand is that there were high expectations on temporary spectrum. If we look at the actual performance on the networks, it is clear, and I think Chair, both ICASA and the department, DCDT, do have some of the data, and we're quite keen to share any outlying data if additional data is more required or necessary in terms of the growth in traffic levels. That already says that there's a success story there. What we would recommend is that given the licensing period that we're talking about in terms of the assignment of new spectrum still being this year, if we understand the ICASA's current schedule, that going into a conversation about balancing perceptions is a difficult one, but a necessary one, because if we don't get across the line in terms of the licensing of additional spectrum, either by virtue of extending the current temporary assignments or by virtue of licensing new spectrum through an auction process, etc., then we're going to severely disappoint consumers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Maxine. Thank you to all the respondents. And I believe that we have managed to tackle quite a number of challenging questions in dealing also with the unknown and the most expected spectrum initiatives to be concluded in due course. I'm going to hand over to Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee now, and also to say from ICASA's side that we really appreciate understanding in particular of what we are currently dealing with as a nation insofar as the spectrum is concerned. There's quite a number of us who are not necessarily engineers who rely mainly on the technicians and engineers that are on board. But what we know for sure is our public accountability responsibility, which lies with many of us, especially the committee itself. And we want to say that we will continue to support the initiatives of the committee and provide the necessary information. And when I was requested to take this responsibility, I just said, do you realize how tense the environment is at the moment insofar as the licensing process is concerned? But we are feeling that and observing that the interest is there especially on the social contract components that need to be adhered to. Thank you very much to the honorable members, to the presenters, also to the members in general, and also to you, Chairperson, for entrusting us with this responsibility. Over to you.
Thank you, Ms. Kadi, and thanks for helping us with the facilitation. Of course, thanks to the presenters. The presentations were quite insightful, and I think honorable members would agree that it has been quite beneficial. I know we have gone a bit out of time that was scheduled, but I think the responses were quite helpful. The committee would continue to make reflections, especially on those matters that relate to regulation and policy, whether it is to be done by the department or the authority, and that will play our oversight role. This is not the end of it. We would continue to have these discussions as a way of enriching our work as the committee, but also relate better to those that are in the industry, whether on the basis of them doing research support to help decision making, or those that are practically in the space as operators and so on. Thank you very much. Thanks, members, for attending. We now officially adjourn the session. Thanks once more. We'll see each other in the House, those that are members, and we'll continue to engage with the other players as we move forward. Thank you.
Chairperson, you've adjourned the meeting, is that correct?
Yes, Honorable Mackenzie.
I just want to say thank you to you and the committee staff for putting this all together, and obviously the presenters, and yesterday's session as well. It's been tremendously informative, and it can only help all of us in our work. So thank you for what you're doing. It's much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Oh, Honorable Thelma Van Dam, are you here?
Who's Thelma?
I got you.
Please withdraw my middle name. Withdraw it, please.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you
very much, Chair. Oh, Honorable Mbeki, I didn't see you. Honorable Mlala, I didn't see you. I spoke to you.
Chairperson. Chair, before you leave.
Yes.
Before you leave, yes, I just wanted to second Honorable Mackenzie on that one. That we had a very, very informative session. And maybe next time, can the administration not confuse us? Because one would have lost on this information had we followed the cancellation that was sent before. And this is the second time that we are receiving a cancellation and then a confirmation. So it sort of confuses us. But I'm glad that we had this session because it was very, very informative.
Now, thank you, Honorable Majosi. We'll follow this up because it's usually created from the IT side. We'll follow it up. Your point is taken. So that members are not excluded because of confusion. Because almost all these sessions are beneficial. I can tell you that even for the side of the course, you will still benefit from these roundtable discussions, I bet with you. Thank you. Thanks, honorable members. And bye.